Much better when they did not know everything. It just had to be coincidence. In one way, she was more than happy to focus on another man making his way through the wagons. It gave an excuse to pull her eyes away from Elaine and Brigitta. In another way, the sight of Galad made her stomach settle right to her shoes. He wore plain brown and a flat velvet cap instead of his white cloak and burnished mail, but his sword still rested on his hip. He had not been to the wagons before, and the effect of his face was dramatic. Muellen took an unconscious step toward him, and the two slender acrobats leaned forward, mouths open. The Chavanas were plainly forgotten, and scowling for it. Even Clarine smoothed her dress as she watched him, until Petra took his pipe from his mouth and said something. Then she went over to where he sat, laughing, and snuggled his face to her plump bosom, but her eyes still followed Galad over her husband's head. Nynaeve was in no mood to be affected by a handsome face. Her breath hardly quickened at all. "It was you, wasn't it?" she demanded before he even reached her. "You seized the river snake, didn't you? Why?" "River serpent," he corrected, eyeing her incredulously. "You did ask me to secure you passage. I didn't ask you to start a riot." "A riot?" Elaine put in. "A war! An invasion! All begun over this vessel." Galad answered calmly. "I gave Nynaeve my word, sister. My first duty is to see you safely on your way to Camelin. And Nynaeve, of course. The children would have had to fight this prophet soon or late." "Couldn't you simply have let us know the ship was here?" Nynaeve asked wearily. "Men and their word. It was all very admirable sometimes, but she should have listened when Elaine said he did what he saw as right, no matter who was hurt." "I don't know what the prophet wanted the ship for, but I doubt it was so you could take passage downriver." Nynaeve flinched. "Besides which, I paid the captain your passage while he was still unloading his cargo. An hour later, one of the two men I left to make sure he did not sail without you came to tell me the other man was dead and the prophet had taken the ship. I don't understand what you are so upset about. You wanted a ship, needed a ship, and I got you one." Frowning, Galad addressed Tom and Julian. "What is the matter with them? Why do they keep staring at one another?" "Women," Julian said simply, and got slapped on the back of the head by Brigitta for his trouble. He glared at her. "Horseflies have a nasty bite," she grinned, and his glower faded into uncertainty as he readjusted his cap. "We can sit here all day discussing right and wrong," Tom said dryly, "or we can take this vessel. Passage has been paid, and there's no getting the price back now." Nynaeve flinched again. However he meant it, she knew how she heard it. "There may be trouble reaching the river," Galad said. "I donned this clothing because the children are not popular in Samara at the moment, but the mobs can set on anyone." He eyed Tom doubtfully, with his white hair and long white moustaches, and Julian a little less so. Even dishevelled, the Tyran looked hard enough to pound posts, and then turned to Uno. "Where is your friend? Another sword might be useful until we reach my men." Uno's smile was villainous. Clearly there was no more love between them than at their first meeting. "He's about, and maybe one or two more. I'll see them to the ship if your white cloaks can hold on to it, or if they can't." Elaine opened her mouth, but Nynaeve spoke up quickly. "That's enough, both of you." Elaine would just have tried honeyed words again. They might have worked, but she wanted to lash out at something, anything. "We need to move quickly." She should have considered when she flung two madmen at the same target what might happen if they both hit at once. "Uno, gather the rest of your men as fast as you can." He tried to tell her they were already waiting on the other side of the menagerie, but she ploughed on. They were madmen, both of them. All men were. "Galad, you—"
"Rouse and rise!"
Luca's shout cut into her words as he trotted between the wagons, limping, and with a bruise discoloring the side of his face. His scarlet cape was soiled and torn. It seemed Tom and Julian were not the only ones to have entered the town.
"Brugh, go tell the horse handlers to hitch the teams.
We'll have to abandon the canvas. He grimaced at the words. But I mean to be on the road in under an hour. Andaya, Kuan, pull your sisters out. Wake anybody still asleep, and if they're washing, tell them to dress dirty or come naked. Hurry, unless you're ready to proclaim the prophet and march to Amadisia. Chin Akima's lost his head already, along with half his performers, and Celia Serrano and a dozen of hers were flogged for being too slow. Move! By that time, everybody except those around Nynaeve's wagon were at the run. Luca's limp slowed as he approached, eyeing Galad warily, and Uno, for that matter, though he had seen the one-eyed man twice before. Nana, I want to talk to you, he said quietly. Alone. We will not be going with you, Master Luca, she told him. Alone, he said, and seized her arm, hauling her away. She looked back to tell the others not to interfere and found there was no need. Elaine and Birgitta were hurrying off toward the canvas wall that encompassed the menagerie, and except for a few glances at her and Luca, the four men were engrossed in conversation. She sniffed loudly. Fine men they were to watch a woman manhandled and do nothing. Jerking her arm free, she strode along beside Luca, silk skirts swishing her displeasure. I suppose you want your money now that we are going? Well, you shall have it. 100 gold marks, though I think you should allow something for the wagon and horses we're leaving behind, and for what we've brought in. We have certainly increased the number of your patrons, Morellin and Julin with their high-walking, me with the arrows, Tom. Do you think I want the gold, woman? He demanded, rounding on her. If I did, I'd have asked for it the day we crossed the river. Have I asked? Did you ever think why not? In spite of herself, she took a step back, crossing her arms beneath her breasts sternly, and immediately wished she had not. That stance more than emphasized what she was exposing. Stubbornness kept her arms where they were. She was not about to let him think she was flustered, especially since she was, but surprisingly, his eyes remained on hers. Maybe he was ill. He had never avoided looking at her bosom before, and if Phelan Luca was not interested in bosoms or gold... If not about the gold, then why do you want to talk to me? All the way back here from the town, he said slowly, following her. I kept thinking that now you would finally go. She refused to back away again, even when he was standing over her and staring down intently. At least he was still looking at her face. I don't know what you are running from, Nana. Sometimes I almost believe your story. Morellin certainly has a noblewoman's manner about her, at least. But you were never a lady's maid. The last few days I've half expected to find the pair of you rolling on the ground, tearing one another's hair. And maybe Marion in the pile. He must have seen something on her face, because he cleared his throat and hurried on. The point is, I can find someone else for Marion to shoot at. You do scream so beautifully anyone would think you were truly terrified, but... He cleared his throat again, even more hastily, and drew back. What I am trying to say is that I want you to stay. There's a wide world out there, 1,000 towns waiting for a show like mine, and whatever is chasing you will never find you with me. A few of Akima's people and some of Celia's who haven't been marched off across the river, they're joining me. Valen Luca's show will be the greatest the world has ever seen. Stay? Why should I stay? I told you from the first we only wanted to reach Gildan, and nothing has changed. Why? Why, to have my children, of course. He took one of her hands in both of his. Nana, your eyes drink my soul. Your lips inflame my heart. Your shoulders make my pulse race. Your... She cut in hurriedly. You want to marry me? She said incredulously. Marry? He blinked. Well, yes, of course. His voice picked up strength again, and he pressed her fingers to his lips. We will be wed at the first town where I can arrange it. I've never asked another woman to marry me. I can quite believe it, she said faintly. It took some effort to pull her hand free. I am sensible of the honor, Master Luca, but... Valen, Nana, Valen. But I must decline... I am betrothed to another. Well, she was, in a way. Lan Mandragoran might think his signet ring just a gift, but she saw it differently. And I am going.
I should bundle you up and carry you with me.
Dirt and rips somewhat spoiled the grandiloquent flourish of his cape as he drew himself up.
With time, you would forget the fellow.
You try it, and I'll have Uno make you wish you had been sliced for sausage.
That barely deflated the fool man at all. She drove a finger hard against his chest.
You do not know me, Valen Luca. You don't know anything about me. My enemies, the ones you dismiss so easily, would make you take off your skin and dance in your bones, and you would be grateful if that was all they did. Now I am going, and I don't have time to listen to your drivel. No, don't say any more. My mind is set, and you will not change it, so you might as well stop blathering.
Luca sighed heavily.
You are the only woman for me, Nana. Let other men choose boring flutterers with their shy sighs. A man would know he had to walk through fire and tame a lioness with his bare hands every time he approached you. Every day an adventure, and every night.
His smile almost earned him boxed ears.
I will find you again, Nana, and you will choose me. I know it in here.
Thumping his chest dramatically, he gave his cape an even more pretentious swirl.
And you know it too, my dearest Nana. In your fair heart you do.
Nynaeve did not know whether to shake her head or gape. Men were mad. All of them. He insisted on escorting her to her wagon, holding her arm as if they were at a ball. Stalking through the turmoil of horse handlers rushing to hitch teams, the din of men shouting, horses whickering, bears growling, leopards coughing, Elaine found herself muttering under her breath to match any of the animals. Nynaeve had no room to talk about her showing her legs. She had seen the way the woman stood up straighter when Valen Luca appeared, and breathed deeper, too. For Galad as well, for that matter. It was not as if she enjoyed wearing breeches. They were comfortable, true, and cooler than skirts. She could see why men chose to wear men's clothes. Almost. There was the problem of getting past the feeling that the coat was really a dress that barely covered your hips. She had just managed that so far. Not that she intended to let Nynaeve know, her and her viperish tongue. The woman should have realized Galad would ignore the cost of keeping his promise. It was not as if Elaine had not told her about him often enough, and involving the prophet. Nynaeve just acted without thinking about what she was doing.
"Did you say something?" Birgitta asked.
She had gathered her skirts over one arm to keep up, unashamedly baring her legs from blue brocaded slippers to well above her knees, and those sheer silk stockings did not hide as much as breeches. Elaine stopped dead.
"What do you think of how I am dressed?"
"It allows freedom of movement," the other woman said judiciously. Elaine nodded.
"Of course, it's good that your bottom isn't too big, as tight as those."
Striding on furiously, Elaine tugged the coat down with sharp yanks. Nynaeve's tongue had nothing on Birgitta's. She really should have required some oath of obedience, or at least some show of proper respect. She would have to remember that once it came time to bond Rand. When Birgitta caught up to her, wearing a sour expression as if she were driven almost beyond endurance, neither of them spoke. Dressed in green sequins, the pale-haired Shanshan woman was using her goad to guide the huge bull Sredit as his head pushed the heavy wagon holding the black-maned lion's cage. A horse handler in a shabby leather vest held the wagon tongue, steering the wagon around to where its horses could be hitched more easily. The lion stalked back and forth, lashing his tail and now and then giving a hoarse cough that sounded like the beginning of a roar.
"Sarandon," Elaine said, "I must speak to you."
"In a moment, Merlin."
Fixed on the tusked gray animal as she was, her quick, slurred way of speaking made her nearly unintelligible.
"Now, Sarandon, we have little time."
But the woman did not halt the Sredit and turn until the horse handler called out that the wagon was in position. Then she said impatiently,
"What do you need, Merlin? I have much to do yet, and I would like to change. This dress is not for traveling."
The animal stood waiting patiently behind her. Elaine's mouth tightened slightly.
We are leaving, Sarandon.
Yes, I know. The riots. Such things should not be allowed. If this prophet thinks to harm us, he will learn what Mare and Sunnet can do.
She twisted to scratch Mare's wrinkled shoulder with her goad, and he touched her shoulder with his long nose.
A trunk, Sarandon called it. Some prefer Lopar or Grom for battle, but Sredit properly used.
Be quiet and listen, Elaine said firmly. It was an effort to maintain her dignity, with the Shan Shan woman being obtuse, and Birgitta standing aside with her arms folded. She was certain Birgitta was just waiting to say something else cutting.
I do not mean the show. I mean myself and Nana and you. We are taking ship this morning. In a few hours we will be beyond the prophet's reach forever.
Sarandon shook her head slowly.
Few river craft can carry Sredit, Morellin. Even if you found one that can, what would they do?
What would I do? I do not think I can earn as much by myself as I can with Master Luca, not even with you high-walking and Marion shooting her bow. And I suppose Tom would juggle. No. No, it is better if we all remain with the show.
The Sredit will have to be left behind, Elaine admitted, but I am sure that Master Luca will take care of them. We will not be performing, Sarandon. There's no more need for that. Where I am going, there are those who would like to learn about...
She was conscious of the horse handler, a lanky fellow with an incongruously bulbous nose, standing close enough to listen.
About where you came from. Much more than you've told us already.
No, not listening. Leering. By turns at Brigitte's bosom and at her legs.
She looked at him until his insolent grin turned sickly, and he scuttled back to his duties.
Sarandon was shaking her head again.
I am to leave Mare and Sunnet and Naren to be cared for by men who are afraid to come near them?
No, Merlin. We will stay with Master Luca.
You too.
It is much better. Remember how bedraggled you were the day you came? You do not want to return to that.
Drawing a deep breath, Elaine stepped closer. No one but Birgitta was close enough to overhear, but she did not want to take foolish chances.
Sarandon. My true name is Elaine of House Trakand, daughter heir of Andor. One day I will be queen of Andor.
Based on the woman's behavior the first day, and even more on what she had told them of Shanchan, that should have been enough to quell any resistance. Instead, Sarandon looked her straight in the eye.
You claimed to be a lady the day you came, but...
Pursing her lips, she eyed Elaine's breeches.
You are a very good high walker, Merlin. With practice, you may be good enough to perform before the Empress one day. Everyone has a place, and everyone belongs in their place.
For a moment, Elaine's mouth worked soundlessly. Sarandon did not believe her.
I have wasted quite enough time, Sarandon.
She reached for the woman's arm, to haul her along bodily if necessary, but Sarandon caught her hand, twisted, and with a wide-eyed yelp, Elaine found herself on tiptoe, wondering whether her wrist would break before her arm came out of her shoulder. Birgitta just stood there, arms folded under her breasts, and had the nerve to raise an eyebrow questioningly. Elaine gritted her teeth. She would not ask for help.
"Release me, Sarandon,"
she demanded, wishing she did not sound quite so breathy.
"I said release me."
Sarandon did, after a moment, and stepped back warily.
You are a friend, Morellin, and always will be. You could be a lady one day. You have the manner, and if you attract a lord, he may take you for one of his Aesa. Aesa sometimes become wives. Go with the light, Morellin. I must finish my work.
She held out the goad for Mare to curl his trunk around, and the big animal let her lead him ponderously away.
Sarandon, Elaine said sharply. Sarandon!
The pale-haired woman did not look back. Elaine glared at Birgitta.
A great lot of help you were, she growled, and stalked off before the other woman could reply.
From what I hear and what I've seen, you have spent considerable time teaching the woman she has a backbone. Did you expect me to help you take it away from her again?
I was not trying to do any such thing, Elaine muttered. I was trying to take care of her.
She is a long way from home, a stranger wherever she goes, and there are some who would not treat her kindly if they learned where she came from.
She seems well able to take care of herself, Birgitta said dryly.
But then, perhaps you taught her that, too. Perhaps she was helpless before you found her.
Elaine's stare seemed to slide off her like ice sliding down warm steel.
You just stood and watched her. You are supposed to be my...
She glanced around. It was only a glance, but several of the horse handlers ducked their heads away.
My warder. You are supposed to help me defend myself when I cannot channel.
Birgitta looked around, too, but unfortunately there was no one close enough to make her hold her tongue.
I will defend you when you are in danger. But if the danger is only of being turned over someone's knee because you've behaved like a spoiled child, I will have to decide whether it's better to let you learn a lesson that might save you the same or worse another time. Telling her you were heir to a throne? Really? If you are going to be Aes Sedai, you had better start practicing how to bend the truth, not break it into shards.
Elaine gaped. It was not until she stumbled over her own feet that she managed to say,
But I am!
If you say so, Birgitta said, rolling her eyes at the spangled breeches. Elaine could not help herself. Nynaeve wielding her tongue like a needle, Sarandon stubborn as two mules, and now this. She threw back her head and screamed with frustration. When the sound died, it seemed as if the animals had quieted. Horse handlers stood about, staring at her. Coolly, she ignored them. Nothing could worm its way under her skin now. She was as calm as ice, perfectly in control of herself.
Was that a cry for help? Birgitta said, tilting her head. Or are you hungry? I suppose I could find a wet nurse in...
Elaine strode away with a snarl that would have done any of the leopards proud.
Chapter 48 Leave-takings. Once she was back in the wagon, Nynaeve changed into a decent dress with a few exasperated mutters for having to undo one set of buttons and do up another by herself. The plain gray wool, fine and well-cut, yet hardly elaborate, would pass without comment almost anywhere, but it was decidedly warmer. Still, it felt good to be decently garbed again, and somehow odd, as if she were wearing too many clothes. It must be the heat. Quickly she knelt in front of the small brick stove with its tin chimney and opened the iron door on their valuables. The twisted stone ring was fast nestled into her belt pouch beside Lan's heavy signet ring and her gold great serpent. The small gilded coffer containing the gems Amathera had given her went into the leather scrip with the pouches of herbs taken from Rhonda Macura in Mardisan and the small mortar and pestle for preparing them. She fingered through the latter just to remind herself what each contained, from heal-all to that dreadful fork-tongue root. The letters of rites went in as well, and three of the six purses, none quite as fat as it had been after paying the menagerie's way to Gildon. Luca might not be interested in his 100 marks, but he had had no qualms about collecting his expenses. One of the letters authorizing the bearer to do whatever she wished in the name of the Ammerlin seat joined the rings. No more than vague rumors of some sort of trouble in Tar Valon had reached Samara. She might find a use for it, even with Swan Sanchez's signature. The dark wooden box she left where it sat, next to three of the purses, as well as the rough jute bag containing the eidom, that she certainly had no wish to touch, and the silver arrow Elaine had found the night of the calamitous encounter with Mogadin. For a moment she frowned at the arrow, contemplating Mogadin. It was best to do whatever was necessary to avoid her. It was. I bested her once, and had been hung up like a sausage in the kitchen the second time. If not for Birgitta. She made her own choice. The woman had said so, and it was true. I could defeat her again. I could. But if I failed... If she failed. She was only trying to avoid the wash leather purse stuffed right to the back, and she knew it. Yet there was not a hair's difference for ugliness between the purse and the thought of losing to Mogadin again. Drawing a deep breath, she gingerly reached in and took it up by the drawstrings, and knew she had been wrong. Evil seemed to bathe her hand, stronger than ever, as if the Dark One really was trying to break through the Quendiyar seal inside. Better to dwell all day on defeat by Mogadine. There was a world of difference between thought and reality. It had to be imagination. There had been no such feeling in Tanchico, but she wished she could let Elaine carry that too, or leave it there. "Stop being foolish," she told herself firmly. "It holds the Dark One's prison shut. You are just letting your fancies run wild." But she still dropped it like a weak dead rat onto the red dress Luca had had made, then wrapped and tied the thing securely with more than a little haste. The silken parcel went into the middle of a bundle of clothes she was taking with her, inside her good gray traveling cloak. A few inches distance was enough to take away the sensation of dark bleakness, but she still wanted to wash her hand. If only she did not know it was there. She was being foolish. Elaine would laugh at her, and Birgitta as well, and rightly. Actually, the clothes she wanted to keep made two packages, and she regretted every stitch she had to leave behind, even the low-cut blue silk. Not that she ever wanted to wear anything like it again. She did not intend to touch the red dress, certainly, until she handed the intact packet to an Aes Sedai in Salidar, but she could not help totting up the cost of clothes, horses, and wagons abandoned since leaving Tanchico, and the coach, and the barrels of dye. Even Elaine would have winced if she had ever thought of it. That young woman believed there would always be coin when she reached into her purse. She was still making the second bundle when Elaine returned and silently changed into a blue silk dress. Silently, except for mutters when she had to double her arms behind her to fasten the buttons. Nynaeve would have helped, had she been asked, but since she was not, she examined the other woman for bruises while she changed. She thought she had heard a scream only minutes before Elaine arrived, and if she and Birgitta had actually come to blows, she was not certain she was glad to find none. A river boat would be just as confining as this wagon in its own way, and less than pleasant if the two women were at one another's throats. But then again it might have helped had they worked off some of their beastly tempers. Elaine said not a word while she gathered her own belongings, not even when Nynaeve asked quite amiably where she had gone herring off to as if she had sat on a cockle-burr. That got only a raised chin and a chilly stare, as though the girl thought she was already on her mother's throne. Sometimes Elaine was even more silent, in a way that said far more than words could. Finding three purses remaining, she paused before taking them, and the temperature in the wagon lowered considerably, though the purses were only her share. Nynaeve was tired of the carping over how she doled out coins. Let the woman watch them dribble away, and realize there might be no more for some time. When Elaine realized the ring was gone, though, and the dark box still sitting there, Elaine hefted the box and opened the lid, pursing her lips as she studied the contents, the other two Turangrial they had carried all the way from Tyr. A small iron disc, worked on both sides with a tight spiral, and a narrow plaque 5 inches long, seemingly amber, yet harder than steel, and with a sleeping woman somehow carved inside it. Either could be used to enter Telairunriod, though not so easily or so well as could the ring. To use either it was necessary to channel spirit, the sole one of the five powers that could be channeled in sleep. It had seemed only right to Nynaeve, leaving them for Elaine, since she was taking charge of the ring. Closing the box with a sharp click, Elaine stared at her, absolutely expressionless, then stuffed it into one of her bundles alongside the silver arrow. Her silence was thunderous. Elaine also made two bundles, but hers were larger. She left nothing out except the spangled coats and breeches. Nynaeve refrained from suggesting that she had overlooked them. She should have, with the sulking that was going on, but she knew how to promote harmony. She limited herself to one sniff when Elaine ostentatiously added the eidom to her things, though from the look she got in return, you would have thought she had made her objections known at length. By the time they left the wagon, the quiet could have been chipped and used to chill wine. Outside, the men were ready, and muttering to themselves and throwing impatient looks at her and Elaine. It was hardly fair. Galad and Uno had nothing to prepare.
Tom's flute and harp hung on his back in leather cases, along with a small bundle, and Juelin, notched sword-breaker at his belt and leaning on his head-high staff, wore an even smaller bundle neatly tied. Men were willing to wear the same clothes until they rotted off. Of course, Birgitta was ready, too, bow in hand, quiver at her hip, and a cloak-wrapped bundle at her feet not much smaller than one of Elaine's. Nynaeve would not have put it past Birgitta to have Luca's dresses in there, but it was what she wore that gave a moment's pause. Her divided skirts could have been the voluminous trousers she had worn in Telairun Riod, except for being more gold than yellow and not being gathered at the ankles. The short blue coat was identical in cut. The mystery of where the garments had come from was solved when Clarine scurried up, chattering that she had taken too long, with two more of the skirts and another coat to fold into Brigitte's bundle. She stayed to say how sorry she was that they were leaving the show, and she was not the only one to take a few moments from the bustle of hitching horses and packing up. Aludra came with wishes for a safe journey, wherever they were going, in her Taraboner accents, and with two more boxes of her fire sticks. Nynaeve tucked them into her scrip with a sigh. She had made a point of leaving the others behind, and Elaine had pushed them to the back of the shelf behind a sack of beans when she thought Nynaeve was not looking. Petra offered to help escort them to the river, pretending not to see his wife's eyes tighten with concern, and so did the Chavanas and Kin and Bari, the jugglers, though when Nynaeve told them there was no need and Petra frowned, they could barely hide their relief. She had to speak quickly, for Galad and the other men looked on the point of accepting. Surprisingly, even Latel appeared briefly with words of regret, smiles, and eyes that said she would carry their bundles if it saw them gone any sooner. Nynaeve was surprised Sarandon did not come, though in a way she was just as glad. Elaine might get on famously with the woman, but since the incident where she had been assaulted, Nynaeve had felt a tension whenever she was around her, perhaps the more because Sarandon gave no outward sign of the same. Luca himself was the last, thrusting a handful of pitiful drought-dwarfed wildflowers at Nynaeve. The light alone knew where he had found them, with protestations of undying love, extravagant praises for her beauty, and dramatic vows to find her again if he had to travel to the corners of the world. She was not sure which made her cheeks grow hotter, but her frosty stare wiped the grin from Julin's face and astonishment from Uno's. Whatever Tom and Galad thought, they had enough sense to keep their features smooth. She could not make herself look at Birgitta or Elaine. The worst was that she had to stand there and listen, wilted flowers drooping over her hand, her face growing redder. Trying to send him away with a flea in his ear would likely only have sparked him to greater efforts and given the others more fodder than they already had. She very nearly heaved a sigh of relief when the idiot man finally bowed himself away in elaborate flourishes of his cape. She held on to the flowers, striding ahead of the others so she did not have to see their faces, and angrily shoving bundles back into place when they shifted, until she was out of sight of the wagons around the canvas wall. Then she threw the bedraggled blossoms down so violently that Rhaegan and the rest of the rough-clad Shinarans, squatting halfway across the meadow to the road, exchanged glances. Each had a blanket-wrapped bundle on his back, small, of course, alongside his sword, but they were hung about with enough water bottles to last for days, and every third man had a pot or kettle dangling somewhere. Fine. If there was cooking to be done, let them do it. Not waiting for them to decide whether she was safe to approach, she stalked out to the dirt road alone. Valen Luca was the source of her fury, humiliating her that way. She should have thumped his head and the Dark One take what anyone thought. But its target was Lan Mandragoran. Lan had never given her flowers. Not that that was of any account. He had expressed his feelings in words deeper and more heartfelt than Valen Luca could ever manage. She had meant every word to Luca, but if Lan said he was going to carry you off, threats would never stop him. Channeling would not stop him unless you managed it before he turned your brain and your knees to jelly with kisses. Still, flowers would have been nice. Nicer than another explanation of why their love could never be, certainly. Men and their word. Men and their honor. Wedded to death, was he? Him and his personal war with the Shadow.
He was going to live, he was going to wed her, and if he thought differently on either point, she intended to set him straight. There was only the small matter of his bond to Moiraine to deal with. She could have screamed in frustration. She was 100 paces down the road before the others caught up, glancing at her sideways. Elaine only sniffed loudly while struggling to readjust the 2 large bundles on her back. She would have to take everything, but Birgitta strode along pretending to speak under her breath, yet quite audibly muttering about women who rushed off like carpen girls leaping from a river cliff. Nynaeve ignored them equally. The men spread out, Galad in the lead flanked by Tom and Julin, the Shinarans in a long file to either side, wary eyes searching every withered bush and fold in the ground. Walking in the middle of them, Nynaeve felt foolish. You would have thought they expected an army to rise up out of the ground. You would have thought she and the other 2 women were helpless, especially when the Shinarans silently followed Uno's lead and unlimbered their swords. Why, there was not a human being in sight. Even the shanty villages appeared abandoned. Galad's blade remained in its scabbard, but Julin began hefting his thumb-thick staff instead of using it for a walking stick, and knives appeared in Tom's hands and vanished, as if he was unconscious of what he was doing. Even Birgitta fitted an arrow to her bow. Nynaeve shook her head. It would take a brave mob to come in eye shot of this lot. Then they reached Samara, and she began to wish she had accepted Petra's offer, and the Chavanas, and anyone else's she could have found. The gates stood open and unguarded, and 6 black columns of smoke rose above the grey town walls. The streets beyond were still. Shattered glass from broken windows crunched underfoot. That was the only sound except for a distant buzz, like monstrous swarms of wasps scattered through the city. Furniture and bits of clothing littered the paving stones, pots and pottery, things dragged from shops and homes, whether by looters or by people fleeing, there was no way to tell. Not only property had been destroyed. In one place, a corpse in a fine green silk coat hung half out of a window, limp and unmoving. In another, a fellow garbed in rags dangled by his neck from the eaves of a tinsmith's shop. Sometimes, down a side street or alley, she caught a glimpse of what might have been discarded bundles of old clothes. She knew they were not. In one doorway, where the splintered door hung crazily by a single hinge, small flames licked up around a wooden staircase, smoke just beginning to trickle out. The street might be empty now, but whoever had done that was not long gone. Head swiveling, trying to watch every way at once, Nynaeve took a firm hold on her belt knife. Sometimes the angry buzz grew louder, a wordless guttural roar of rage that seemed no more than one street over, and sometimes it faded to a dull murmur. Yet when trouble came, it came suddenly and silently. The mass of men stalked around the next corner but one, like a pack of hunting wolves, jamming the street from side to side, soundless but for the thud of boots. The sight of Nynaeve and the others was a torch tossed into a haystack. There was no hesitation. As one, they surged forward, howling and rabid, waving pitchforks and swords, axes and clubs, anything that could be taken to hand for a weapon. Enough anger still clung in Nynaeve for her to embrace Sidar, and she did it without thinking, even before she saw the glow spring up around Elaine. There were 12 ways she could halt this mob by herself, 12 more she could destroy it if she chose, if not for the possibility of Mogadine. She was not sure whether the same thought held Elaine. She only knew that she hung on to her anger and the true source with equal fervor, and it was Mogadine more than the onrushing rabble that made it hard. She hung on to them and knew she dared do nothing. Not if there was any other chance. Almost she wished she could cut the flows being woven by Elaine. There had to be some other chance. One man, a tall fellow in a ragged red coat that had belonged to someone else once by its green and gold embroidery, ran out in front of the others on long legs, shaking a wood axe overhead. Birgitta's arrow took him through 1 eye. He went down in a sprawling heap and was trampled by the others, all contorted faces and wordless screams. Nothing was going to stop them. With a wail, half outrage, half pure fear, Nynaeve jerked her belt knife free and at the same time prepared to channel.
like a wave striking boulders, the charge splintered on Shinaran steel. The top-knotted men, not much less ragged than those they fought, worked their two-handled swords methodically, craftsmen at their craft, and the onslaught went no farther than their thin line. Men fell screaming for the prophet, but more scrambled over them. Julin, the fool, was in that row, flat-topped conical cap perched on his dark head, thin staff a blur that deflected stabs, broke arms, and cracked skulls. Tom worked behind the line, his limp strong as he darted from place to place to confront the few who managed to wriggle through. Only a dagger in either hand, yet even swordsmen died on those blades. The gleeman's leathery face was grim, but when one bulky fellow in a blacksmith's leather vest nearly reached Elaine with his pitchfork, Tom snarled as viciously as any in the mob and very nearly cut the man's head off while slitting his throat. Through it all, Birgitta calmly shifted from spot to spot, every arrow finding an eye. Yet if they held the mob, it was Galad who broke them. He faced their charge as though awaiting the next dance at a ball, arms folded and unconcerned, not even bothering to bare his blade until they were almost on top of him. Then he did dance, all his grace turned in an instant to fluid death. He did not stand against them. He carved a path into their heart, a clear swath as wide as his sword's reach. Sometimes five or six men closed in around him with swords and axes and table legs for clubs, but only for the brief time it took them to die. In the end, all their rage, all their thirst for blood, could not face him. It was from him that the first ran, flinging away weapons, and when the rest fled, they divided around him. As they vanished back the way they had come, he stood 20 paces from anyone else, alone among the dead and the groans of the dying. Nynaeve shivered as he bent to clean his blade on a corpse's coat. He was graceful, even doing that. He was beautiful, even doing that. She thought she might sick up. She had no idea how long it had taken. Some of the Shinarans were leaning on their swords, panting, and eyeing Galad with a good deal of respect. Tom was bent over with one hand on his knee, trying to fend Elaine off with the other, while telling her he just had to catch his breath. Minutes? An hour? It could have been either. For once, looking at the injured men lying on the pavement here and there, the one crawling away, she felt no desire to heal, no pity at all. Not far off was a pitchfork where someone had flung it. A man's severed head was impaled on one tine, a woman's on another. All she felt was queasy, and grateful that it was not her head. That, and cold. "Thank you," she said aloud, to no one in particular and to everyone. "Thank you very much." The words grated a little. She did not like confessing something she had not been able to do for herself, but they were fervent. Then Birgitta nodded in acknowledgement, and Nynaeve had to struggle with herself. But the woman had done as much as anyone, considerably more than she herself. She thrust her belt knife back into its sheath. "You shot very well." With a wry grin, as if she knew exactly how difficult those words had been, Birgitta set about recovering her arrows. Nynaeve shuddered and tried not to watch. Most of the Shinarans had wounds, and Tom and Julin both wore their own blood in places. Miraculously, Galad was untouched, or perhaps not so miraculously, remembering how he had handled his sword. But manlike to the bitter end, every one of them insisted that his hurts were not serious. Even Uno said they had to keep moving, him with one arm hanging and a gash down the side of his face, whose scar would nearly mirror the first if it was not healed soon. In truth, she was not reluctant to go, despite telling herself that she should be seeing to injuries. Elaine put a supporting arm around Tom. He responded by refusing to lean on her and beginning to recite a tale in high chant, so flowery it was difficult to recognize the story of Kirukan, the beautiful soldier queen of the Trolloc Wars. "She had a temper like a boar caught in briars at the best," Birgitta said softly to no one in particular. "Not at all like anyone close by." Nynaeve ground her teeth. Catch her complimenting the woman again no matter what she did.
Come to think of it, any man in the Two Rivers could have shot as well at that range. Any boy.
Rumbles followed them, distant roars from other streets, and often she had the feeling of eyes watching from one of the vacant glassless windows. But word must have spread, or else the watchers had seen what happened, because they saw no one else living until suddenly 2 dozen white cloaks stepped into the street in front of them, half with drawn bows, the rest with bared blades. The Shinaran's blades were up in a heartbeat. Quick words between Galad and a fellow with a grizzled face beneath his conical helmet passed them through, though the man did eye the Shinarans doubtfully, and Tom and Julin, and for that matter Birgitta. It was enough to rankle Nynaeve. All very well for Elaine to march along with her chin raised, ignoring the white cloaks as though they were servants, but Nynaeve did not like being taken for granted. The river was not far. Beyond a few small stone warehouses under slate roofs, the town's 3 stone docks barely reached water over the dried mud. A fat vessel with 2 masts sat low at the end of one. Nynaeve hoped there would be no problem obtaining separate cabins. She hoped it would not heave too badly. A small crowd huddled 20 paces from the dock, under the watchful eyes of 4 white-cloaked guards, nearly 12 men, mainly old and all ragged and bruised, and 2x as many women, most with 2 or 3 children clinging to them, some with a babe in arms beside. 2 more white cloaks stood right at the dock. The children hid their faces in their mother's skirts, but the adults gazed yearningly at the ship. The sight wrenched at Nynaeve's heart. She remembered the same gazes, many more of them, in Tanchico, people desperately hoping for a way to safety. She had not been able to do anything for those. Before she could do anything for these, Galad had seized her and Elaine by the arm and hustled them along the dock and down an unsteady gangplank. 6 more stern-faced men in white cloaks and burnished mail stood on the deck, watching a cluster of barefoot and mostly bare-chested men squatting in the bluff bows. It was close whether the captain at the foot of the plank gazed at the white cloaks more sourly, or at the motley party that trooped onto his ship. Agni Neres was a tall, bony man in a dark coat, with ears that stood out and a dour cast to his narrow face. He paid no mind to the sweat rolling down his cheeks. "You paid me passage for 2 women. I suppose you want me to take the other wench and the men for free?" Birgitta eyed him dangerously, but he seemed not to see. "You shall have your fair money, my good captain," Elaine told him coolly. "As long as it's reasonable," Nynaeve said, and ignored Elaine's sharp glance. Neres's mouth thinned, though it hardly seemed possible, and he addressed Galad again. "Then if you'll get your men off my craft, I'll sail. I like being here in daylight now less than ever." "As soon as you take your other passengers on," Nynaeve said, nodding to the people huddled ashore. Neres looked for Galad only to find that he had moved away to speak with the other white cloaks, then eyed the folk ashore and spoke to the air above Nynaeve's head. "Any who can pay. Not many in that lot looked like they can, and I could not take the lot if they could." She raised herself on tiptoe so he could not possibly miss her smile. It snapped his chin down into his collar. "Every last one of them, Captain, else I'll shave your ears off for you." The man's mouth opened angrily, then abruptly his eyes widened, staring past her. "All right," he said quickly, "but I expect some sort of payment, mind. I give alms on first day, and that's long past." Heels settling back to the deck, she looked over her shoulder suspiciously. Tom, Julin, and Uno stood there, blandly watching her and Neres, as blandly as they could manage with Uno's features and blood all over their faces. Far too blandly. With a sharp sniff, she said, "I will see them all aboard before anybody touches a rope," and went in search of Galad. She supposed he deserved some thanks. He had thought what he was doing was the right thing. That was the trouble with the best of men. They always thought they were doing the right thing. Still, whatever the 3 had done, they had saved argument. She found him with Elaine, that handsome face painted with frustration. He brightened at the sight of her. "Nynaeve, I've paid your way as far as Boanda. That's only halfway to Altara, where the Bourne runs into the Eldar, but I could not afford to pay further.
Captain Nera's took every copper in my purse, and I had to borrow besides. The fellow charges 10 prices. I'm afraid you will have to make your own way to Camelin from there. I truly am sorry.
You have done quite enough already, Elaine put in, her eyes drifting toward the plumes of smoke rising above Samara.
I gave my promise, he said, with a weary resignation.
Plainly they had had the same exchange before Nynaeve came. Nynaeve managed to offer her thanks, which he dismissed graciously, but with a look as if she, too, did not understand, and she was more than ready to admit as much. He started a war to keep a promise. Elaine was right about that. It would be a war, if it was not already. Yet, with his men holding Nera's ship, he would not demand a better price. It was Nera's ship, and Nera's could charge as he chose, as long as he took Elaine and Nynaeve. It was true. Galad never counted the cost of doing right, not to himself or anyone else. At the gangplank he paused, staring at the town as if seeing the future.
"Stay clear of Randall Thor," he said bleakly. "He brings destruction. He will break the world again before he is done. Stay clear of him."
And he was trotting up to the dock, already calling for his armor. Nynaeve found herself sharing a wondering gaze with Elaine, though it quickly broke up in embarrassment. It was hard to share a moment like that with someone you knew might rake you with her tongue. At least, that was why she felt discomfited. Why Elaine should look flustered, she could not imagine, unless the woman was starting to come to her senses. Surely Galad did not suspect they had no intention of going to Camelin. Surely not. Men were never that perceptive. She and Elaine did not look at one another again for some time. Chapter 49 To Boanda. There was little trouble getting the huddled crowd of men, women, and children aboard. Not once Nynaeve made it clear to Captain Nera's that he was going to find room for everyone, and whatever he thought he was going to charge, she knew exactly how much she would give for their fares to Boanda. Of course, it might have helped a little that she'd taken the precaution of quietly telling Uno to have the Shinarans do something with their swords. 15 hard-faced, rough-dressed men, all with shaved heads and top-knots, not to mention bloodstains, oiling and sharpening blades, laughing as one recounted how another had almost been spitted like a lamb. Well, they had a most salutary effect. She counted the money into her hand, and if it pained her, she only had to summon the memory of those docks at Tanchico to keep counting. Nera's was right in one thing. These folk did not look to have much coin. They would need whatever coppers they had. Elaine had no call to ask in that sickly sweet tone if she was having a tooth pulled. The crew ran at Nera's shouted commands to cast off while the last of the people were still scrambling aboard carrying their wretched possessions in their arms, those who had anything at all beyond the rags on their backs. In truth, they crowded the fat vessels so that Nynaeve began to wonder whether Nera's had been right about that, too. Yet such hope dawned on their faces once their feet were firmly on the deck that she was embarrassed to have considered it. And when they learned she had paid their passage, they clustered around her, struggling to kiss her hands, the hem of her skirt, crying out thanks and blessings, some with tears streaming down dirty cheeks, men as well as women. She wished she could sink through the planks under her feet. The decks bustled as sweeps went out and sails rose, and Samara began to dwindle behind before she could put an end to the demonstration completely. If Elaine or Birgitta had said one word, she would have thumped them both twice around the ship for good measure. 5 days they were on River Serpent, 5 days running down the slowly winding Eldar through baking days and nights not much cooler. Some things changed for the better in that time, but the voyage did not begin well. The first real problem of the trip was Nera's cabin in the stern, the only accommodation on the ship except the deck. Not that Nera's was reluctant about moving out. His haste, breeches and coats and shirts flung over his shoulders and dangling from a great wad in his arms, shaving mug clutched in one hand and razor in the other, made Nynaeve look hard at Tom and Julin and Uno. It was one thing for her to make use of them when she chose to, quite another for them to go looking after her behind her back. Their faces could not have been more open, or their eyes more innocent. Elaine brought up another of Linny's sayings. An open sack hides nothing, and an open door hides little, but an open man is surely hiding something. But whatever problem the men might prove to be, the problem now was the cabin itself. It smelled of must and mold, even with the tiny windows swung out, and they let little light into its dank confines. Confines was the word. The cabin was small, smaller than the wagon, and most of the space was taken by a heavy table and high-backed chair fastened to the floor, and the ladder leading up to the deck. A washstand built into the wall, with a grimy pitcher and bowl and a narrow dusty mirror, crowded the room still more, and completed the furnishings, except for a few empty shelves and pegs for hanging clothes. The ceiling beams crouched right overhead, even for them. And there was only one bed, wider than what they had been sleeping on, yet hardly wide enough for two. Tall as he was, Nerez might as well have lived in a box. The man surely had not given up one inch that might be stuffed with cargo. "He came to Samara in the night," Elaine muttered, unburdening herself of her bundles and putting hands on hips as she looked around disparagingly. "And he wanted to leave in the night. I heard him tell one of his men that he meant to sail on through the night, whatever the wenches wanted. Apparently he's not much pleased to be moving in daylight." Thinking of the other woman's elbows and cold feet, Nynaeve wondered whether she would not have done better to sleep up above with the refugees. "What are you going on about?" "The man is a smuggler, Nynaeve." "In this vessel?" Dropping her own bundles, Nynaeve laid the scrip on the table and sat down on the edge of the bed. No, she would not sleep on deck. The cabin might smell, but it could be aired out, and if the bed was cramped, it had a thick feather mattress. The ship did roll disturbingly. She might as well have what comfort she could. Elaine could not chase her out of there. "It is a barrel. We will be lucky to reach Boanda in 2 weeks. The light alone knows how long to Salidar." Neither of them really knew how far Salidar was, and it was not yet time to broach the matter with Captain Nerez. "Everything fits, even the name. River Serpent. What honest trader would name his craft so? Well, what if he is? It wouldn't be the first time we've made use of a smuggler." Elaine threw up her hands in exasperation. She always did think obeying the law was important, however fooled the law was. She shared more with Galad than she would be willing to admit. So Nerez had called them wenches, had he? The second difficulty was room for the others. River Serpent was not a very large vessel, if wide, and counting everyone, there were well over 100 people aboard. A certain amount of space had to go to the crew working the sweeps and tending ropes and sails, and that did not leave much for the passengers. It did not help that the refugees kept as far from the Shinarans as possible. It seemed they had had their fill of armed men. There was scarcely room for everyone to sit, and none for lying down. Nynaeve approached Nerez straight away. "These folk need more room, especially the women and children. Since you have no more cabins, your hold will have to do." Nerez's face darkened. Staring straight ahead, somewhere a pace to her left, he growled, "My hold is full of valuable cargo. Very valuable cargo."
"I wonder if customs men are active along the Eldar here," Elaine said idly, eyeing the tree-lined banks to either side. The river was only a few hundred paces wide here, bordered with dried black mud and bare yellow clay. "Gildan to one side and Amadisia to the other? It might seem odd, your hold full of goods from the south, and you heading south. Of course, you probably have all the documents showing where you've paid duties, and you could explain that you didn't unload because of the troubles in Samara. I have heard that excise men are quite understanding, really."
The corners of his mouth turning down, he still did not look at either of them, which was why he had a very good view when Tom fanned empty hands, made a flourish, and was suddenly twirling a pair of knives through his fingers before making one of them disappear.
"Just keeping in practice," Tom said, scratching one long mustache with the other blade. I like to maintain certain skills. The gash in his white-haired scalp and the fresh blood on his face added to a blood-stained rent in one shoulder of his coat and tears elsewhere besides made him look villainous in any company but Uno's. The Shinaran's toothy smile held no mirth at all and did unfortunate things to his long scar and the new slash down his face, red and raw. The glaring crimson eye on his patch almost paled in comparison. Nerez shut his eyes and drew a long, long breath. The hatches came open, and crates and casks went splashing over the side, some heavy, most light and smelling of spices. Nerez winced every time the river closed over something else. He brightened, if such a thing could be said of him, when Nynaeve directed that bolts of silk and carpets and bales of fine woolens be left below, until he realized that she meant them for bedding. If his face had been sour before, now it could have curdled milk in the next room. When women began drawing up buckets of water on ropes to wash their children right there on the deck, he strode to the stern, hands clenched behind his back, and stared at the few floating casks as they fell behind. In a way, it was Nerez's peculiar attitude toward women that began smoothing the edges from Elaine's acid tongue and Birgitta's. That was the way Nynaeve saw it. She herself had maintained her usual even disposition, of course. Nerez disliked women. The crew spoke quickly when they had to speak to one of the women, all the while darting glances at the captain until they could hurry back to their duties. A fellow who seemed to have nothing to do for a moment was more likely than not to be sent running to some task by a roar from Nerez if he exchanged two words with anyone in skirts. Their hasty comments and muttered warnings made Nerez's opinions perfectly clear. Women cost a man money, they fought like alley cats, and they caused trouble. Any and all trouble a man had could be laid to women, one way or another. Nerez expected half of them to be rolling on the deck, clawing one another before the first sunset. They would all flirt with his crew and bring on dissension where they did not cause fights. Could he have sent all women off his ship forever, he might have been happy. Could he have had them out of his life, he would have been ecstatic. Nynaeve had never encountered the like. Oh, she had heard men mutter about women and money as if men did not fling coin about like water. They just had no head for money, less than Elaine. And she'd even heard them lay various troubles to women, usually when it was they themselves who had caused all the bother. But she could not recall ever meeting a man who truly disliked women. It was a surprise to learn that Nerez had a wife and a horde of children in Ebu Dar, but no surprise that he stayed at home only long enough to load a new cargo. He did not even want to talk to a woman. It was simply amazing. Sometimes Nynaeve found herself looking at him sideways, the way she would have at some incredible animal, far stranger than Sredit or anything else in Luca's menagerie. Naturally, there was no way that Elaine or Birgitta could vent their bile where he might hear. Rolling eyes and meaningful looks among Tom and the others were bad enough. They at least made some effort to hide them. Nera's open satisfaction at having his ridiculous expectations met, he surely would have seen it so. That would have been unbearable. He left them no choice but to swallow their acid and smile. For herself, Nynaeve could have done with a little time with Tom and Uno and Julin away from Nera's eye. They were forgetting themselves again, forgetting they were supposed to do as they were told. The results did not matter. They should wait. And for some reason they had taken to tormenting Nerez with darkly smiling comments about cracking heads and slitting throats. But the only place she could be sure of avoiding Nerez was in the cabin. They were not particularly large men, though Tom was tall and Uno fairly wide, yet crowded in there, they would have filled the tiny space to where they were looming over her. Hardly conducive to the tongue-lashing she wanted to hand out. Give a man the chance to loom, and he had the battle half won. So she put on a pleasant mask, ignored startled frowns from Tom and Julin, incredulous stares from Uno and Regan, and enjoyed the outward good temper the other women had been forced to adopt. She managed to keep smiling when she learned why the sails were so full,
the undulating river banks rushing by under the afternoon as fast as a trotting horse. Nera's had had the sweeps pulled in and stored along the railings. He looked almost happy. Almost. A low clay bluff ran along the Amadisia River. On the Gildan side lay a broad ribbon of reeds between river and trees, mainly brown where water had receded. Samara lay only a few hours upriver. "You channeled," she said to Elaine through her teeth. Wiping sweat from her brow with the back of her hand, she resisted the urge to dash it to the slowly heaving deck. The other passengers left a clear space for the two of them, and Birgitta a few paces across, but she still kept her voice low, and as affable as she could manage. Her stomach seemed to move a heartbeat behind the ship's roll. That hardly improved her temper. "This wind is your doing." She hoped there was enough red fennel in her scrip. From Elaine's damply glowing countenance and wide eyes, milk and honey should have fountained from her mouth. "You are turning into a frightened rabbit. Pull yourself together. Samara is miles behind us. No one could sense anything useful from that far. She would have to be on the ship with us to know. I was very quick." Nynaeve thought her own face might crack if she held her smile any longer, but out of the corner of her eye she could see Nera's, studying his passengers and shaking his head. Angry as she was at that moment, she could also see the almost faded residue of the other woman's weaving. Working weather was like rolling a stone downhill. It tended to keep going the way you started it. When it bounced away from the path, as it would sooner or later, you just had to twitch it back. Mogadine might have felt a weave of that size from Samara, maybe, but certainly not well enough to say where it had been done. She herself was a match for Mogadine in raw strength, and if she was not strong enough to do something, it seemed safe to say the Forsaken was not either. And she did want to travel as quickly as possible. Right then, one day more than necessary in close quarters with the other two held as much attraction for her as sharing the cabin with Nera's. For that matter, an extra day on the water was nothing to look forward to. How could a ship move in such a fashion when the river looked so flat? Smiling was beginning to make her lips ache. "You should have asked, Elaine. You always go and do things without asking, without thinking. It's time you realized if you fall into a hole running blindly, your old nurse isn't going to come pick you up and wash your face." By the last word, Elaine's eyes were as round as teacups, and her bared teeth looked ready to bite. Birgitta put a hand on each of them, leaning close and beaming as though joy had her by the throat. "If you two don't stop this, I'm going to tip you both into the river to cool off. You are both acting like shago barmaids with winter itch." Sweating faces frozen in amiability, the three women stalked in different directions, just as far apart as the ship would allow. Near sunset, Nynaeve heard Rhaegan say that she and the others must really be relieved to be away from Samara, the way they were all but laughing on one another's shoulder, and the other men seemed to be thinking much the same. But the rest of the women aboard watched them with faces much too smooth. They knew trouble when they saw it. Yet, bit by bit, that trouble oozed away. Nynaeve was not exactly sure how. Perhaps the pleasant exteriors Elaine and Birgitta put on just seeped inside in spite of them. Perhaps the ridiculousness of it all, trying to keep a friendly smile on your face while putting a proper bite into your words, struck them more and more. Whatever did it, she could not complain at the outcome. Slowly, day by day, words and tones began to match faces, and now and then one of them even looked embarrassed, plainly remembering how she had been behaving. Neither spoke one word of apology, of course, which Nynaeve quite understood. Had she been as foolish and vicious as they, she certainly would not want to remind anyone. The children played a part in restoring Elaine and Birgitta to equilibrium, too, though it actually started with Nynaeve looking after the men's wounds that first morning on the river. She brought out her scrip full of herbs, making poultices and ointments, bandaging cuts. Those gashes made her angry enough to heal. Sickness and injury always made her angry, and she did so for some of the worst, though she had to be careful. Wounds vanishing would have set people talking, and the light knew what Nera's would do if he thought he had an Aes Sedai aboard, very likely sneak a man ashore in Amadisia by night and try to have them arrested.
For that matter, the news might have sent some of the refugees over the side. With Uno, for example, she rubbed a touch of stinging mardroot oil liniment into his heavily bruised shoulder, dabbed a bit of heel oil ointment on the fresh slash down his face, no point wasting either, and wrapped his head in bandages until he could hardly move his jaw before healing him. When he gasped and flailed, she said briskly, "Don't be such a baby. I wouldn't have thought a little pain would bother a big, strong man. Now you leave those alone. If you even touch them in the next 3 days, I'll dose you with something you won't soon forget." He nodded slowly, staring at her so uncertainly that it was plain he did not know what she had done. If he realized when he finally took the bandages off, with luck, no one else would remember exactly how bad the gash had been, and he should have sense enough to keep his mouth shut. Once she began, it was only natural to go on to the rest of the passengers. Few of the refugees lacked bruises and scrapes, and some of the children were showing signs of fevers or worms. Those she could heal without worry. Children always made a fuss when they were dosed with anything that did not taste of honey. If they told their mothers it had felt odd, children always had fancies. She had never really been comfortable around children. True, she wanted to have Lan's babies. Part of her did. Children could make a mess from nothing. They seemed to have the habit of doing the opposite of what you told them as soon as your back was turned, just to see how you would react. Yet she found herself smoothing back the dark hair of a boy no higher than her waist, who stared up at her owlishly with bright blue eyes. They looked very like Lan's eyes. Elaine and Birgitta joined her, just to help keep order at first, but one way or another they gravitated to the children, too. Strangely, Birgitta did not look at all silly with a boy of 3 or 4 cradled on either hip, and a ring of children about her, singing them a nonsense song about dancing animals. And Elaine handed round a sack of sweet red candies. The light knew where she had gotten them, or why. She did not look guilty at all when Nynaeve caught her sneaking one into her own mouth. She only grinned, gently pulled the little girl's thumb from her mouth, and replaced it with another candy. The children laughed as if just remembering how, and snuggled themselves into Nynaeve's skirts, or Elaine's, or Birgitta's, as easily as into their mother's. It was very difficult to maintain any sort of temper in those circumstances. She could not even bring herself to do more than sniff, and that faintly, when Elaine resumed her study of the Eidam in the privacy of the cabin on the second day. The woman seemed more convinced than ever that the bracelet, necklace, and leash created a strange form of linking. Nynaeve even sat with her once or twice. The sight of the vile thing itself was enough to enable her to embrace Sidar and follow along. The refugees' stories came out, of course. Families separated, lost or dead. Farms and shops and crafts ruined as ripples of the world's troubles spread out, disrupting trade. People could not buy when they could not sell. The profit had only been the last brick on the cart that broke the axle. Nynaeve said nothing when she saw Elaine slipping a gold mark to a fellow with thin gray hair who knuckled a wrinkled forehead and tried to kiss her hand. She would learn how fast gold vanished. Besides, Nynaeve had handed out a few coins herself. Well, perhaps more than a few. All but two of the men were grizzled or balding, with leathery faces and work-calloused hands. Younger men had been snatched into the army if they were not caught up by the prophet. Those who refused one or the other had been hanged. The young pair, little more than boys, really. Nynaeve doubted if either had to shave regularly, wore hunted stares, and flinched if one of the Shinarans looked at them. Sometimes the older men talked of starting over, finding a bit of land to farm or taking up their trade again, but the tone of their voices said it was more bluff and bravado than real hope. Mostly they talked quietly of their families, a wife lost, sons and daughters lost, grandchildren lost. They sounded lost. The second night, a jug-eared fellow who had seemed the most enthusiastic in a sad lot had just vanished. He was simply gone when the sun came up. He might have swum ashore. Nynaeve hoped he had. Still, it was the women who caught her heart. They had no more prospects than the men, no more certainties, but most had more burdens. None had a husband with her, or even knew if she had a husband alive,
yet the responsibilities that weighed them down also kept them moving. No woman with grit could give up when she had children. Even the others meant to find some future, though. They all had at least a scrap of the hope the men only pretended to. Three especially tugged at her. Nicola was about her age and height, a slender, dark-haired weaver with big eyes who had been intending to marry. Until her Hiron took it into his head that duty called him to follow the prophet, to follow the dragon reborn. He would marry her when his duty was seen to. Duty had been very important to Hiron. He would have made a good and conscientious husband and father, so Nicola said. Only whatever was in his head had not done him much good when someone split it with an axe. Nicola did not know who or why, just that she had to get as far from the prophet as she could. Somewhere, there had to be a place where there was no killing, where she would not always be in fear of what might be around the next corner. Marigan, a few years older, had been plump once, but her frayed brown dress hung on her loosely now, and her blunt face looked beyond weary. Her two sons, 6 and 7, stared silently at the world with two big eyes. Clinging to each other, they seemed frightened of everything and everyone else, even their own mother. Marigan had dealt in cures and herbs in Samara, though she had some odd ideas about both. That was no wonder, really. A woman who offered healing with Amadisia and white cloaks right across the river had to keep low, and even from the first she had had to teach herself. All she had ever wanted to do was cure sickness, and she claimed to have done it well, though she had not been able to save her husband. The 5 years since his death had been hard, and the coming of the prophet had certainly not helped her any. Mobs searching for Aes Sedai chased her into hiding after she had cured a man of fever, and rumor had turned it into bringing him back from the dead. That was how little most people knew of Aes Sedai. Death was beyond the power to heal. Even Marigan seemed to think it was not. She did not know where she was going any more than Nicola. A village somewhere, she hoped, where she could dispense herbs again in peace. Arena was the youngest of the three, with steady blue eyes in a face bruised purple and yellow, and not from Gildan at all. Her clothes would have said that if nothing else did. A short dark coat and voluminous trousers not much different from Birgitta's. They were the sum of her possessions. She would not say where she was from exactly, but she was forthcoming about the road that had led her to River Serpent. About some of it. Nynaeve had to infer in places. Arena had gone to Ilion, meaning to bring her younger brother home before he could take the oath as a hunter for the Horn. With thousands in the city, however, she had never found him, but somehow she had found herself taking the oath, setting out to see the world while not quite believing the Horn of Valier existed, half hoping that somewhere she would find young Gwyll and take him home. Things had been difficult since. Arena was not precisely reluctant to talk, but she made such an effort to put a good face on things. She'd been chased out of several villages, robbed once, and beaten several times. Even so, she had no intention of giving up or seeking sanctuary or a peaceful village. The world was still out there, and Arena meant to wrestle it to the ground. Not that she put it that way, but Nynaeve knew it was what the woman meant. Nynaeve knew very well why they touched her most, too. Each story could have been the reflection of a thread in her own life. What she did not quite understand was why she liked Arena best. It was her opinion, putting this and that together, that nearly all of Arena's troubles came from having too free a tongue, telling people exactly what she thought. It could hardly be coincidence that she was harried out of one village so quickly she had to leave her horse behind after calling the mayor a pie-faced loon and telling some village women that dry-bones kitchen sweepers had no right to question why she was on the road alone. That was what she admitted to saying. Nynaeve thought a few days of herself, for example, would do Arena worlds of good. And there had to be something she could do for the other two as well. She could understand a desire for safety and peace very well. There was an odd exchange the morning of the second day, while tempers were still tender and tongues, some people's tongues, still rough. Nynaeve said something, quite mildly, about Elaine not being in her mother's palace, so she need not think Nynaeve was going to sleep shoved against the wall every night. Elaine tilted up her chin, but before she could open her mouth, Birgitta blurted, "You are the daughter heir of Andor?" She hardly looked around to make sure no one was close enough to hear.
"I am."
Elaine sounded more dignified than Nynaeve remembered in some time, but there was a hint of, could it be, satisfaction? Face completely blank, Birgitta simply turned away, walking up into the bow where she sat on a coil of rope, staring at the river ahead. Elaine frowned after her, then finally went to sit beside her. They sat talking softly for some time. Nynaeve would not have joined them, even had she been asked. Whatever they discussed, Elaine seemed slightly disgruntled, as if she had expected some other result, but after that there was hardly a cross word between them. Birgitta resumed her own name later that same day, though it was a last flare of temper that did it. With Mogadin safely behind them, she and Elaine washed the black out of their hair with poke leaf, and Nera's seeing one with red-gold curls about her shoulders, and the other yellow-gold in an intricate braid, and that one with bow and quiver, muttered acridly about Birgitta stepping out of the bloody stories. It was his misfortune that she overheard. That was her name, she told him sharply, and if he did not like it, she would pin his ears to either mast he chose, blindfolded. He stalked off red-faced and shouting for lines to be tightened that could not have been made any tighter without popping. At that point, Nynaeve would not have cared whether Birgitta actually carried out the threat. Pokeleaf might have left a slight reddish cast to her own hair, yet it was close enough to its natural color almost to make her cry for joy. Unless everyone aboard came down with sore gums and toothaches, she had more than enough poke leaf remaining, and sufficient red fennel to keep her stomach in its place. She could not help sighing in satisfaction once her hair was dry and in a proper braid again. Of course, with Elaine channeling good winds and Nera's running light or dark, thatch-roofed villages and farms sped past on either bank, marked by people waving in the day and lit windows in the night, showing no sign of the turmoil farther upriver. Broad as the misnamed craft was, it made good time, rolling along downriver. Nera seemed torn between pleasure at his good luck at such winds and worry at moving in daylight. More than once he gazed longingly at a backwater, a tree-shrouded stream or pool cut deep into the bank, where River Serpent might have been moored and hidden. Occasionally, Nynaeve remarked where he could hear about how glad he must be that the people from Samara would soon be off his ship, with a comment thrown in about how well this woman was looking now that she was rested, or how energetic that woman's children were. That was enough to put ideas of stopping right out of his head. It might have been easier to threaten him with the Shinarans, or Tom and Juulin, but those fellows were getting entirely too big-headed as it was. And she certainly had no intention of arguing with a man who still would neither look at her nor talk to her. Gray dawning of the third day saw the crew manning the sweeps again to draw them into a dock at Boanda. It was a considerable town, larger than Samara, on a point of land where the swift river Bourne, coming down from Jahanna, ran into the slower Eldar. There were even three towers inside the tall gray walls, and a building shining white beneath a red tile roof that could certainly pass for a palace, if a small one. As River Serpent was lashed fast to the heavy pilings at the end of one dock, half their length across dried mud, Nynaeve wondered aloud why Nera's had gone all the way to Samara when he could have unloaded his goods here. Elaine nodded toward a stout man on the dock who wore a chain with some sort of seal hanging across his chest. There were several others like him, all with the chain and a blue coat, intently watching two other broad vessels unload at other docks. "Queen Aleandra's excise man, I should say." Drumming his fingers on the rail, Nera's was not looking at the men just as intently as they were at the other vessels. Perhaps he had an arrangement with those in Samara. I don't think he wants to talk to these. The men and women from Samara marched reluctantly up the gangplank, ignored by the excisemen. There was no custom duty on people. For the Samarans, it was the beginning of uncertainty. They had their lives ahead of them, and to begin anew what they stood up in and what Nynaeve and Elaine had given them. Before they were halfway down the dock, still huddling together, some of the women were beginning to look as disheartened as the men. Some even began to cry. Vexation painted Elaine's face. She always wanted to take care of everyone. Nynaeve hoped Elaine did not discover that she had slipped a few more silvers to some of the women. Not all left the ship. Arena remained, and Nicola, and Marigan, tightly clutching her sons, who gazed in anxious silence after the other children vanishing toward the town. The two lads had not said a word since Samara that Nynaeve had heard.
"I want to go with you," Nicola told Nynaeve, unconsciously wringing her hands. "I feel safe near you."
Marigan nodded emphatically. Arena said nothing, but she stepped closer to the other two women, making herself part of the group, even as she looked levelly at Nynaeve, defying her to send her away. Tom shook his head slightly, and Julin grimaced, but it was to Elaine and Brigitte that Nynaeve looked. Elaine did not hesitate in nodding, and the other woman was only a second behind. Gathering her skirts, Nynaeve marched to Nera's, standing in the stern.
"I suppose I will have my ship back now," he told the air somewhere between the ship and the dock. "Not before time. This voyage has been the worst I ever undertook."
Nynaeve smiled broadly. For once he did look at her before she was done. Well, he almost did. It was not as if Nera's had much choice. He could hardly appeal to the authorities in Boanda, and if he did not like the fares she offered, well, he had to sail downriver anyway. So the river serpent cast off again, heading for Ebou Dar, with one stop to be made that he was not informed of until Boanda began falling astern.
"Salidar," he growled, staring over Nynaeve's head. "Salidar's been abandoned since the White Cloak War. It would take a fool woman to want to be ashore at Salidar."
Even smiling, Nynaeve was angry enough to embrace the source. Nera's roared, slapping at his neck and his hip at the same time. "The horseflies are very bad this time of year," she said sympathetically. Brigitte roared with laughter before they were halfway down the deck. Standing in the bows, Nynaeve inhaled deeply as Elaine channeled to bring the wind up again, and River Serpent lumbered into the strong current flowing out of the bourne. She was all but eating red fennel for meals, but even if she ran out before Salidar, she would not care. Their journey was almost over. Everything she had been through was worth it for that. Of course, she had not always thought so, and Elaine and Brigitte's rasping tongues had not been the only cause. That first night, lying on the captain's bed in her shift, while a yawning Elaine occupied the chair and Brigitte leaned against the door with her head brushing the beams, Nynaeve had used the twisted stone ring. A single, rusty, gimbal-mounted lamp gave light, and surprisingly a scent of spice from the oil. Maybe Nera's had not liked the stench of must and mold either. If she was ostentatious about nestling the ring between her breasts and making sure the others knew it touched skin, well, she had cause. A few hours of superficially reasonable behavior on their parts had not made her less wary. The heart of the stone was exactly as it had been every time before, pale light coming from everywhere and nowhere, the glittering crystal sword Kalendor thrust into the floor stones beneath the great dome, rows of huge polished red stone columns running off into shadow. And that sensation of being watched that was so common in Tel Iranriod. It was all Nynaeve could do not to flee or set off on a frantic search through the columns. She forced herself to stand in one place beside Kalendor, counting slowly to 1,000, and pausing every 100 to call Egwene's name. Truly, it was all she could do. The control she was so proud of vanished. Her clothes flickered with her worries about herself and Mugadine, Egwene and Rand and Lan. Between one minute and the next, stout Two Rivers woolens became a muffling cloak and deep hood, which became a suit of White Cloak mail, which became the red silk dress, only transparent, which became an ever thicker cloak, which became... She thought her face changed, too. Once she saw her hands, with skin darker than Julin's. Perhaps if Mogadine could not recognize her.
"Egwene!"
The last hoarse call echoed among the columns, and Nynaeve made herself stand there shivering for one more count of 100. The great chamber remained empty except for her. Wishing she could feel more regret than haste, she stepped out of the dream, and lay fingering the stone ring on its thong, staring at the thick beams above the bed, and listening to the thousand creaks of the ship rushing downriver through the darkness.
"Was she there?" Elaine demanded. "You were not gone very long, but..."
"I am tired of being afraid," Nynaeve said, without taking her gaze from the beams. "I am so tired of being a coward."
The last words dissolved into tears she could neither stop nor hide, no matter how she scrubbed at her eyes. Elaine was there in an instant, holding her and smoothing her hair, and an instant later, Birgitta pressed a cloth dampened in cool water against the back of her neck. She cried herself out to the sound of them telling her she was not a coward.
"If I thought Mogadine was hunting me," Birgitta said finally, "I would run. If there was no other place to hide than a badger's hole, I would wriggle in and curl into a ball and sweat until she was gone. I would not stand in front of one of Sarandon's Sredit if it charged either, and neither is cowardice. You must choose your own time and your own ground, and come at her in the way she least expects. I will take my revenge on her if ever I can, but that is the only way I will. Anything else would be foolish."
That was hardly what Nynaeve wanted to hear, but her tears and their comfort made another gap in the thorny hedges that had grown up between them. "I will prove to you that you are no coward." Taking the dark wooden box from the shelf where she had put it, Elaine removed the spiral-scribed iron disc. "We will go back together." That Nynaeve wanted to hear even less, but there was no way to avoid it, not after they had told her she was not a coward. So back they went. To the Stone of Tyr, where they stared at Kalendor, better than looking over your shoulder and wondering whether Mogadine was going to appear, then to the royal palace in Camelin with Elaine leading, and Emmons Field under Nynaeve's guidance. Nynaeve had seen palaces before, with their huge halls and great painted ceilings and marble floors, their gilding and fine carpets and elaborate hangings, but this was where Elaine had grown up. Seeing it, and knowing that, made her understand a little of Elaine. Of course the woman expected the world to bend itself to her. She had grown up being taught that it would, in a place where it did. Elaine, a pale image of herself because of the Tarangreal she was using, was strangely quiet while they were there. But then Nynaeve was quiet in Emmons Field. For one thing, the village was larger than she remembered, with more thatch-roofed houses and others' wooden frameworks going up. Someone was building a very big house just outside the village, 3 sprawling stories, and a stone plinth 5 paces high had been erected on the green, carved all over with names. A good many she recognized. They were mostly Two Rivers names. A flagpole stood to either side of the plinth, one topped by a banner with a red wolf's head, the other one with a red eagle. Everything looked prosperous and happy, as much as she could say, with no people there, but it made no sense. What on earth were those banners, and who would be building such a house? They flashed to the White Tower, to Elida's study. Nothing had changed there except that only 6 stools remained in the semicircle in front of Elida's table, and the triptych of Bonwyn was gone. The painting of Rand remained, with a poorly mended tear in the canvas across Rand's face, as if someone had thrown something at it. They rifled the papers in the lacquered box with its golden hawks and those on the keeper's table in the anteroom. Documents and letters changed while they looked at them, yet they did learn a little. Elida knew that Rand had crossed the Dragon Wall into Cairhien, but of what she intended to do about it there was no clue. An angry demand that all Aes Sedai return to the tower immediately unless they had specific orders otherwise from her. Elida seemed to be angry about a good deal, that so few sisters had returned after her offer of amnesty, that most of the eyes and ears in Tarabon were still silent, that Padrón Nael was still calling White Cloaks back to Amadicia when she did not know why, that Davram Bashir still could not be found despite having an army with him. Fury filled every document over her seal.
None of it seemed of real use or interest, except maybe about the white cloaks. Not that they should have any difficulty there, as long as they were on River Serpent. When they returned to their bodies on the ship, Elaine was silent as she rose from the chair and replaced the disc in the box. Without thinking, Nynaeve got up to help her out of her dress. Birgitta scrambled up the ladder as they climbed into the bed together in their shifts. She intended to sleep right at the top of the ladder, she said. Elaine channeled to extinguish the lamp. After a time lying in the dark, she said, "The palace seemed so empty, Nynaeve. It felt so empty." Nynaeve did not know what else a place was supposed to be in Tel Iranriod. "It was the Turangrial you used. You looked almost foggy to me." "Well, I looked just fine to me." There was only a touch of asperity in Elaine's voice, though, and they settled down to sleep. Nynaeve had remembered the other woman's elbows accurately, but they could not diminish her good mood, and neither could Elaine's complaining murmur that she had cold feet. She had done it. Perhaps forgetting to be afraid was not the same as not being afraid, but at least she had gone back to the world of dreams. Perhaps one day she could find the nerve again not to be afraid. Having begun, it was easier to go on than to stop. Every night after that they entered Tel Iranriod together, always with a visit to the tower to see what they could learn. There was not very much, besides an order sending an emissary to Salidar to invite the Aes Sedai there to return to the tower. Except the invitation, as much as Nynaeve could read before it changed to a report on screening potential novices for proper attitudes, whatever that was supposed to mean, was more a demand that those Aes Sedai submit to Elaida immediately and be thankful they were allowed to. Still, it was confirmation that they were not chasing a wild hare. The trouble with the rest of what they saw in fragments was they did not know enough to fit them together. Who was this Davram Bashir, and why was Elaida so frantic to find him? Why had Elaida forbidden anyone to mention the name of Mazrim Time, the false dragon, with a threat of stiff penalties? Why had Queen Tenobia of Saldaya and King Isar of Shinar both written letters politely but stiffly resenting White Tower meddling in their affairs? It all made Elaine murmur one of Linny's sayings, "To know two, you must first know one." Nynaeve could only agree that it certainly seemed so. Aside from the trips to Elaida's study, they worked at learning control of themselves and their surroundings in the world of dreams. Nynaeve did not mean to let herself be caught again as she had been by Egwene and by the Wise Ones. Mogadine she tried not to think about. Much better to concentrate on the Wise Ones. Of Egwene's trick of appearing in their dreams, as she had in Samara, they could puzzle out nothing. Calling her did nothing except increase that uneasy feeling of being watched, and she did not make another such appearance. Trying to hold somebody else in Tel Iranriod was incredibly frustrating, even after Elaine hit on the trick, which was to see the other as just another part of the dream. Elaine did it finally, and Nynaeve congratulated her with as good grace as she could muster, but for days Nynaeve could not. Elaine might as well have been the near mist she seemed, vanishing with a smile whenever she chose. When Nynaeve finally managed to fasten Elaine there, she felt the strain as if she were picking up a boulder. Creating fantastical flowers or shapes by thinking of them was much more fun. The effort involved seemed related to both how large the thing was and whether it might really exist. Trees covered with wildly shaped blossoms in red and gold and purple were harder to make than a stand mirror to examine what you had done to your dress or what the other woman had done to it. A gleaming crystal palace rising out of the ground was harder still, and even if it felt solid to the touch, it changed whenever the image in your mind wavered and vanished as soon as the image did. They quietly decided to leave animals alone after a peculiar thing, much like a horse with a horn on its nose, chased them both up a hill before they could make it vanish. That very nearly sparked a new argument, with each of them claiming the other had made it. But by that time Elaine had recovered enough of her old self to start giggling over how they must have looked, racing up the hill with their skirts hauled up, shouting at the thing to go away. Even Elaine's stubborn refusal to admit it had been her fault could not stop Nynaeve's giggles from bubbling up, too.
Elaine alternated between the iron disc and the apparently amber plaque with its carving of a sleeping woman, but she did not really like using either Turangrial. As hard as she worked with them, she did not feel as fully in Telairan Riod as with the ring, and each did have to be worked. It was not possible to tie the flow of spirit, or you bounced right back out of the world of dreams immediately. Channeling anything else at the same time seemed all but impossible, yet Elaine could not understand why. She seemed more interested in how they had been made, and not at all pleased that they did not yield their secrets as easily as the Eidam. Not knowing the why was a burr in her stocking. Once Nynaeve tried one of the pair, coincidentally on the night they were to meet Egwene, the night after leaving Boanda. She would not have been angry enough if not for the thing that rubbed her wrong so often. Men. Neres began it, stumping around the deck as the sun began to sink, muttering to himself about having his cargo stolen. She ignored him, of course. Then Tom, making up his bed at the foot of the aftermast, said quietly, "He has a point." It was plain he did not see her in the fading, lurid light, and neither did Julin squatting beside him. He's a smuggler, but he did pay for those goods. Nynaeve had no right to seize them. "A woman's flaming rights are whatever she flaming says they are," Uno laughed. "That's what women in Shinar say, anyway." That was when they saw her and fell silent, as usual, finding wisdom too late. Uno rubbed at his cheek, the one without a scar. He had removed his bandages that day, and he knew now what had been done. She thought he looked embarrassed. It was hard to tell in the fast-shifting shadows, but the other two seemed to have no expression at all. She did nothing to them, of course, only stalked away with a firm grip on her braid. She even managed to stalk down the ladder. Elaine already had the iron disc in her hand. The dark wooden box sat open on the table. Nynaeve picked up the yellowish plaque carved inside with a sleeping woman. It felt slick and soft, not at all something that would scratch metal. With that edge of anger smoldering inside her, Sayidar was a warm glow just out of sight over her shoulder. "Maybe I can come up with some idea why this thing won't let you channel anything but dribbles." Which was how she found herself in the heart of the stone, channeling a flow of spirit into the plaque, which in Telairan Riod was tucked into her belt pouch. As she often did in the world of dreams, Elaine wore a gown suitable for her mother's court, green silk embroidered in gold around the neck, with a necklace and bracelets of gold links and moonstones. But Nynaeve was surprised to discover that she herself had on something not very different, though her hair was in a braid, and its own color, instead of loose about her shoulders. Her gown was pale blue and silver, and if not so low as Luca's dresses, still lower than she thought she would have chosen. Still, she liked the way the single fire drop on its silver chain looked gleaming between her breasts. Egwene would not find it easy to bully a woman dressed so. Certainly not that that could have had anything to do with why she had donned it, even unconsciously. Right away she saw what Elaine had meant about looking just fine. To herself she appeared no different than the other woman, who had the twisted stone ring somehow threaded onto her necklace. Elaine, however, said she looked misty. Misty was how Sayidar felt, too, except for the flow of spirit she had begun to weave while awake. The rest was thin, and even the never-seen warmth of the true source seemed muted. Her anger remained just strong enough for her to channel. If irritation at the men faded before the puzzle, that puzzle was its own irritant. Stealing herself to confront Egwene had no part in it. She was not stealing herself at all, and there was no reason for the faint taste of boiled catfern and powdered maven's leaf on her tongue. Yet producing a single flame, dancing in mid-air, one of the first things a novice was taught, seemed as difficult as throwing Lan over her shoulder. The flame looked attenuated even to her, and as soon as she tied the weave, it began to fade away. In seconds it was gone. "Both of you," Amis said. She and Egwene were just there on the other side of Kalandor, both in Aiel skirts and blouses and shawls. At least Egwene had not donned so many necklaces and bracelets.
Why do you appear so strange, Nynaeve? Have you learned to come waking?
Nynaeve gave a little jump. She did so hate people sneaking up on her.
Egwene, how did you...
she began, smoothing her skirts, at the same time that Elaine said,
Egwene, we can't understand how you...
Egwene broke in.
Rand and the Aiel have won a great victory at Cairhien.
Out it all came in a torrent, everything she had told them in their dreams, from Samael to the Shan-Shan spearhead. Each word almost tripped over the next, and she drove everyone home with an intense stare. Nynaeve exchanged confused glances with Elaine. Surely she had told them. They could not have imagined it, not with every word confirmed now. Even Amys, long white hair only emphasizing the not-quite-Aes Sedai agelessness of her face, looked amazed at the flood.
"Matt killed Cooladin?" Nynaeve exclaimed at one point. That had certainly not been in their dreams of her. It did not sound like Matt at all. Leading soldiers? Matt?
When Egwene finally trailed off, shifting her shawl and breathing a little quickly, she had barely paused for breath along the way. Elaine said weakly,
"Is he well?"
She sounded as if she was almost beginning to doubt her own memories.
"As well as can be expected," Amys said. "He drives himself hard and listens to no one, except Moiraine."
Amys was not pleased.
"Avienda is with him almost all the time," Egwene said. "She is taking good care of him for you."
Nynaeve doubted that. She did not know much about Aiel, but she suspected that if Amys said hard, anyone else would say murderously. Apparently Elaine agreed.
"Then why is she letting him push himself? What is he doing?"
Quite a bit, it turned out, and clearly too much. 2 hours each day practicing the sword with Lan or anyone else he could find. That made Amys's mouth tighten sourly. 2 more studying the Aiel way of fighting without weapons. Egwene might find that strange, but Nynaeve was all too aware of how helpless you could be when you could not channel. Still, Rand certainly should never find himself in that position. He had become a king, or something more, surrounded by Far Dar Isma'i guards, ordering lords and ladies about. In fact, he spent so much time ordering them and chasing after them to make sure they did what he said, that he would not spare time for meals, if the maidens did not bring him food wherever he was. For some reason, while that seemed to irk Egwene almost as much as it did Elaine, Amys looked distinctly amused, though her face went back to Aiel's stoniness once she saw Nynaeve notice. Yet another hour each day was given to a strange school he had founded, inviting not only scholars but craftsmen, from some fellow who made looking glasses to a woman who had constructed some sort of huge crossbow with pulleys that could hurl a spear a mile. He had told no one his purpose there, except maybe Moiraine, but the only answer the Aes Sedai had given Egwene was that the urge to leave something behind was strong in everyone. Moiraine did not seem to care what Rand did.
"What remains of the Shido are retreating north," Amys said grimly, "and more slip across the Dragon Wall to them every day. But Randall Thor seems to have forgotten them. He is sending the spears south toward Tyr. Half are gone already. Ruark says he has not even told the chiefs why, and I do not think Ruark would lie to me. Moiraine stands closer to Randall Thor than any except Avienda, yet she refuses to ask him."
Shaking her head, she muttered, "Though in her defense I will say that even Avienda has learned nothing."
"The best way to keep a secret is to tell no one," Elaine told her, which earned her a hard stare.
Amys was not far behind Bear when it came to stares that made you shift your feet.
"We aren't going to reason it out here," Nynaeve said, fixing her gaze on Egwene. The other woman seemed uneasy. If there was any time to begin redressing the balance between them, it might as well be now.
"What I want to know..." "You are quite right," Egwene cut in. "We are not in Shiriam's study, where we can lounge about and chatter. What have you to tell us? Are you still with Master Luca's menagerie?"
Nynaeve's breath caught, questions flying right out of her head. There was so much to tell, and so much not to.
She claimed she had followed Lanfear to the meeting between the Forsaken, and spoke only of seeing Mogadin spying. Not that she wanted to avoid telling how she had been handled by Mogadin. Not really. Not exactly. But Brigitte had not released them from their promise of secrecy. Of course, that meant not telling about Brigitte at all, that she was with them. It was awkward, knowing that Egwene knew Brigitte was helping them, and still having to keep pretending that Egwene knew nothing at all. But Nynaeve managed, despite stammering, when Egwene arched her eyebrows. The light be thanked, Elaine helped her present Samara as Galad and Massima's fault. Which it was, in truth. If either had simply sent to tell her about the ship, none of the rest would have followed. When she finished with Salidar, Amis said quietly, "You are certain they will support the Karakarn?" "They must know the prophecies of the dragon as well as Elaida," Elaine said. "The best way to oppose her is to attach themselves to Rand and make it clear to the world that they intend to support him all the way to Tarmon Gaiden." Not the slightest quaver in her voice betrayed that she was not speaking of an absolute stranger. "Otherwise they are just rebels with no claim to legitimacy. They need him at least as much as he needs them." Amis nodded, but not as if she was ready to agree yet. "I think I remember Massima," Egwene said. "Hollow eyes and a sour mouth?" Nynaeve nodded. "I can hardly imagine him as any sort of prophet, but I can see him starting a riot or a war. I'm sure Galad only did what he thought was best." Egwene's cheeks colored slightly. Even the memory of Galad's face could do that. "Rand will want to know about Massima and Salidar, if I can make him stand still long enough to listen." "I want to know how it happens that you are both here," Amis said. She listened to their explanation and turned the plaque over in her hand once Nynaeve fished it out. Having the Turangrial touched by someone else while she was using it made Nynaeve's skin crawl. "I believe you are less here than Elaine," the Wise One said finally. "When a dreamwalker enters the world of dreams in her sleep, only a tiny bit of her remains with her body, just enough to keep her body alive. If she puts herself into a shallow sleep where she can be here and also speak to those around her in the waking world, she looks as you do to one who is here fully. Perhaps it is the same. I do not know that I like it, any woman who can channel being able to enter Telairanriod, even in this state." She returned the Turangrial to Nynaeve. Heaving a sigh of relief, Nynaeve hastily tucked the plaque away again. Her stomach was still fluttering. "If you have told everything..." Amis paused while Nynaeve and Elaine hurriedly said that they had. The woman's blue eyes were incredibly penetrating. "Then we must go. I will admit there is more to be gained from these meetings than I first supposed, but I have much to do yet tonight." She glanced at Egwene, and they vanished as one. Nynaeve and Elaine did not hesitate. Around them, the great redstone columns changed in a blink to a small, dark-paneled room, its furnishings few, plain and sturdy. Nynaeve's anger had been wavering, and with it her hold on Saidar, but the mistress of novices' study firmed both. Stubbornly defiant indeed. She hoped that Shiriam was in Salidar. It would be a pleasure to face her on an equal footing. Still, she could have wished to be somewhere else. Elaine was peering into the mirror with its flaking gilt frame, nonchalantly adjusting her hair with her hands. Only she had no need to use her hands here. She did not like being in this room either. Why had Egwene suggested meeting here? Elida's study might not be the most comfortable place to be, but it was better than this. A moment later Egwene was there, on the other side of the broad table, eyes icy and hands on her hips as if she was the room's rightful occupant. Before Nynaeve could open her mouth, Egwene said, "Have you two brainless flap-tongues become witless ninnies? If I ask you to keep something to yourselves, do you immediately tell the first person you meet? Did it never occur to you that you don't have to tell everyone everything? I thought you two were good at keeping secrets." Nynaeve's cheeks grew warmer. At least she could not possibly be as scarlet as Elaine. Egwene was not quite finished. "As for how I did it, I can't teach you. You have to be a dreamwalker. If you can touch somebody's dreams with the ring, I don't know how.
And I doubt you can with that other thing. Try to keep your mind on what you're doing. Salidar may be nothing like you expect. Now, I also have things to do tonight. At least try to keep your wits about you. And she was gone so suddenly, the last word almost seemed to come from empty air. Embarrassment ate at Nynaeve's anger. She had nearly burst out with it after Egwene asked her not to. And Birgitta, how could you keep a secret when the other woman knew? Embarrassment won, and Saidar slipped away like sand through her fingers. Nynaeve wakened with a jerk, the deep yellow Turangreal firmly clutched in one hand. The gimbal-mounted lamp was turned down to a dim light. Elaine lay crowded in next to her, still asleep. The ring on its thong had slid down into the hollow of her throat. Muttering to herself, Nynaeve clambered over the other woman to put away the plaque, then poured a little water into the washbasin to bathe her face and neck. The water was lukewarm, but it felt cool. In the shadowy light, she thought the mirror said she was still blushing. So much for redressing the balance. If only they had met anywhere else. If only she had not flapped her tongue like a brainless girl. It would have gone better if she had been using the ring, instead of being a wraith as far as the other woman was concerned. It was all Tom and Julin's fault, and Uno's. If they had not made her angry... No, it was Nerys's fault. He... She took the pitcher in both hands and washed her mouth. It was only the taste of sleep she was trying to get rid of. Nothing like boiled catfern and powdered maven's leaf. Nothing at all. When she turned from the washstand, Elaine was just sitting up, untying the leather cord that held the ring. I saw you losing Saidar, so I went by Elida's study, but I didn't think I should stay long in case you worried. I didn't learn anything, except that Shemiran is to be arrested and reduced to accepted. She got up and tucked the ring into the box. They can do that? Demote an Aes Sedai? I don't know. I think Elida is doing anything she wants. Egwene shouldn't wear those Aiel clothes. They're not very becoming. Nynaeve let out the breath she had been holding. Obviously Elaine wanted to ignore what Egwene had said. Nynaeve was willing to let her. No, they certainly aren't. Climbing onto the bed, she scrunched over against the wall. They took turns sleeping on the outside. I did not even have a chance to send a message to Rand. Elaine got in after, and the lamp winked out. The small windows let in only dribbles of moonlight. And one to Avienda. If she is taking care of him for me, then she ought to take care of him. He isn't a horse, Elaine. You don't own him. I never said I did. How will you feel if Lan takes up with some Kyrianen woman? Don't be silly. Go to sleep. Nynaeve burrowed fiercely into her small pillow. Perhaps she should have sent word to Lan. All those noble women, Tyran as well as Kyrianen, feeding a man honey instead of telling him the truth. He had better not forget who he belonged to now. Below Boanda, woods closed in tightly on both sides of the river, unbroken tangles of trees and vines. Villages and farms vanished. The Eldar might as well have run through wilderness 1,000 miles from human habitation. 5 days out of Samara, early afternoon found River Serpent anchored in the middle of a bend in the river, while the ship's one boat ferried the remaining passengers to a beach of cracked dry mud, bordered by low forested hills. Even the tall willows and deep-rooted oaks showed some brown leaves. There was no need to give the man that necklace, Nynaeve said on the shore, watching the rowboat approach, crowded with 4 oarsmen, Julin, and the last 5 Shinarans. She hoped she had not been gullible. Nerys had showed her his map of this stretch of the river, pointing out the mark for Salidar 2 miles from the water, but nothing else indicated there had ever been a village anywhere near here. The forest wall was quite unbroken. What I paid him was quite enough. Not to cover his cargo, Elaine replied. Just because he's a smuggler doesn't mean we have a right to take it from him. Nynaeve wondered whether she had been talking to Julin. Probably not. It was just the law again. Besides, yellow opals are gaudy, especially in that setting. Anyway, it was worth it just to see his face. Elaine giggled abruptly. He looked at me this time. Nynaeve tried not to, but she could not help giggling too.
Tom was up near the trees, trying to amuse Marigan's two boys by juggling colored balls produced from his sleeves. Jarl and Sieve stared at him silently, hardly blinking, and held on to each other. Nynaeve had not really been surprised when Marigan and Nicola asked to accompany her. Nicola might be watching Tom and laughing delightedly now, but she would have spent every moment at Nynaeve's side had the latter allowed it. Arena wanting to come had been something of a shock, though. She was sitting off by herself on a fallen log watching Birgitta, who was stringing her bow. All three women might be in for a shock when they discovered what was in Salidar. At least Nicola would find her sanctuary, and Marigan might even have a chance to dispense herbs, if there were not too many yellows about. Nynaeve, have you thought about how we're going to be received? Nynaeve looked at Elaine in astonishment. They had crossed half the world, or near enough, and defeated the Black Aja twice. Well, they'd had help in Tyr, but Tanchico had been all their doing. They brought news of Elida and the tower she was willing to bet no one in Salidar had. And, most importantly, they could help these sisters make contact with Rand. Elaine, I won't say they will greet us as heroes, but it wouldn't surprise me if they kissed us before today is done. Rand alone would be worth that. Two of the barefoot sailors leaped out to hold the rowboat against the current, and Julin and the Shinaran splashed ashore as the sailors scrambled back aboard. On River Serpent, men were already hauling in the anchor. "Clear us a path, Uno," Nynaeve said. "I mean to be there before dark." From the look of the forest, all vines and dusty undergrowth, 2 miles might take that long, if Nera's had not managed to gull her. That worried her more than anything else. Chapter 50. To Teach and Learn. Some 4 hours later, the sweat running down Nynaeve's face had very little to do with unseasonable heat, and she was wondering whether it might not have been better if Nera's had gulled them, or refused to carry them beyond Boanda. Late afternoon sunlight slanted sharply through windows with mostly cracked panes. Clutching her skirts in blended irritation and unease, she tried to avoid looking at the six-eyed Sedai grouped around one of the sturdy tables near the wall. Their mouths moved silently as they conferred behind a screen of Saidar. Elaine had her chin high, her hands folded calmly at her waist, but a tightness about her eyes and the corners of her mouth spoiled her regal air. Nynaeve was not sure she wanted to know what the Aes Sedai were saying. One stunning blow after another had knocked all her high expectations into a daze. One more shock and she thought she might scream, and she did not know whether from fury or pure hysteria. Very nearly everything except their clothes was laid out on that table, from Birgitta's silver arrow in front of stout Morvrin, to the 3 Tarangreal before Shiriam, to the gilded coffers in front of dark-eyed Mirel. Not one of the women looked pleased. Carlinia's face might have been carved from snow. Even motherly Anaya wore a stern mask, and Beonin's look of constant wide-eyed startlement had a distinctly annoyed cast. Annoyed and something more. Sometimes Beonin made as if to touch the white cloth spread neatly over the Quendiar seal, but her hand always stopped and retreated. Nynaeve's eyes jerked away from the cloth. She knew exactly when things had begun to go wrong. The warders who surrounded them in the woods had been proper, if cool, once she made Uno and the Shinarans put up their swords anyway. And Min's warm greetings had been all laughter and hugs. But the Aes Sedai and others in the streets, caught up in their own errands, had scurried along with hardly a glance for the party being escorted in. Salidar was quite crowded, with armed men drilling in nearly every open space. The first person aside from the warders and Min to pay any attention to them at all had been the lean brown sister they were taken to in what had once been the common room of this inn. She and Elaine had told the story they had agreed on to Phaedrin Sedai, or tried to. 5 minutes into it, they were left standing, with strict orders not to move a foot or speak a word, even to each other.
10 more minutes, staring at one another in confusion, while all around them accepted and white-clad novices, warders and servants and soldiers bustled between tables where Aes Sedai pored over papers and briskly handed out orders. And then they had been hustled before Shiriam and the others so quickly, Nynaeve did not think her shoes had touched the floor twice. That was when the grilling had begun, more suitable for captured prisoners than returning heroes. Nynaeve dabbed at the perspiration on her face, but as soon as she tucked the handkerchief back up her sleeve, her hands returned to their grip on her skirts. She and Elaine were not alone, standing on the colorful silk carpet. Swan, in a plain dress of fine blue wool, might have been there by choice if Nynaeve had not known better, her face cool, utterly composed. She seemed lost in untroubled thought. Lyanna, at least, watched the Aes Sedai, yet she appeared equally confident. In fact, somehow more self-confident than Nynaeve remembered. The copper-skinned woman looked even more willowy, too, more supple in some fashion. Perhaps it was her scandalous dress. That pale green silk was every bit as high-necked as Swan's, but it clung to every curve of her, and the material only managed to be opaque by a thin hair. It was their faces that truly stunned Nynaeve, though. She had never expected to find either alive, and certainly never looking so very young, no more than a few years older than she, if that. They did not so much as glance at one another. In truth, she thought she detected a distinct chill between them. There was another difference about them, one that Nynaeve was just beginning to recognize. If everyone, including Min, had been ginger about it, no one made any real secret of the fact that they had been stilled. Nynaeve could feel that lack. Perhaps it was being in a room where all the other women could channel, or perhaps it was knowing they had been stilled. But for the first time she was truly conscious of the ability in Elaine and the others, and its absence from Swan and Lyanna. Something had been taken from them, cut away. It was like a wound, perhaps the worst wound a woman could suffer. Curiosity overcame her. What sort of wound would it be? What had been cut away? She might as well make use of the waiting and the irritation that larded itself through her nervousness. She reached out to Saidar. "Did anyone grant you permission to channel here accepted?" Shiriam asked, and Nynaeve gave a start, hurriedly releasing the true source. The green-eyed Aes Sedai led the others back to their mismatched chairs, arranged on the carpet in a semicircle that had the four standing women as its focus. Some of them carried things from the table. They sat staring at Nynaeve, earlier emotions swallowed in Aes Sedai calm. None of those ageless faces acknowledged the heat by so much as a single bead of moisture. Finally, Anaya said in a gently chiding voice, "You have been very long from us, child. Whatever you have learned in the interval, you have apparently forgotten much." Blushing, Nynaeve curtsied. "Forgive me, Aes Sedai. I did not mean to overstep." She hoped they thought it was shame that heated her cheeks. She had been away from them a long time. Just one day ago, she had given the orders and people jumped when she spoke. Now she was the one expected to jump. It galled.
"You tell an interesting story."
Carlinia obviously believed little of it. The White Sister turned Brigitte's silver arrow over in long, slender hands.
"And you acquired some strange possessions."
"The Panarch Amathera gave us many gifts, Aes Sedai," Elaine said. "She seemed to think we saved her throne."
Even delivered in a perfectly level voice, that speech was a walk on thin ice. Nynaeve was not the only one irritated by their fall from freedom. Carlinia's smooth face tightened.
"You come with disturbing news," Shiriam said, "and some disturbing things."
Her slightly tilted eyes wandered to the table, to the silvery eidom, and returned firmly to Elaine and Nynaeve. Since learning what it was, what it was for, most of the Aes Sedai had treated it like a live red adder. Most had.
"If the thing does what these children claim," Morvryn said absently, "we need to study it.
And if Elaine really believes she can make a Turangrial...
The brown sister shook her head.
Her real attention was on the flattened stone ring, all flecked and striped in red and blue and brown, that she held in one hand. The other two Turangrial lay on her broad lap.
"You say that this came from Varin Sedai? How is it this was never mentioned to us before?"
That was not directed at Nynaeve or Elaine, but at Swan. Swan frowned, but not the fierce frown Nynaeve remembered. It held a touch of diffidence, as if she knew she was speaking to her superiors, and so did her voice. That was another change Nynaeve could hardly believe.
"Varin never told me of it. I would very much like to ask her a few questions."
"And I have questions about this." Mirel's olive face darkened as she unfolded a familiar paper. Why had they ever kept that? And read aloud. "What the bearer does is done at my order and by my authority. Obey and keep silent at my command. Swan Sanche, Watcher of the Seals, Flame of Tarvalin, the Amerlin Seat." She crumpled the paper and its seal in her fist. Hardly something to be handed out to accepted.
"At the time, I did not know who I could trust," Swan said smoothly.
The Six Eyes Sedai stared at her.
"It was within my authority, then."
The Six Eyes Sedai did not blink. Her voice took on a thread of exasperated pleading.
"You cannot call me to account for doing what I had to do when I had a perfect right to do it. When the boat's sinking, you plug the hole with what you can find."
"And why did you not tell us?" Shiriam asked quietly, but with a hint of steel. As mistress of novices, she had never raised her voice, though sometimes you wished she would.
"Three accepted. Accepted! Sent out of the tower, chasing 13 full sisters of the Black Adja. Do you use babies to plug the hole in your boat, Swan?"
"We are hardly babies," Nynaeve told her heatedly. "Several of those 13 are dead, and we thwarted their plans twice. In Tyr, we..."
Carlinia cut her off like an icy knife.
"You have told us all about Tyr, child, and Tanchico, and defeating Mogadin." Her mouth twisted wryly. She had already said that Nynaeve had been a fool to come within a mile of one of the Forsaken, that she was lucky to have escaped with her life. That Carlinia did not know how right she was, they certainly had not told everything, only made Nynaeve's stomach clench tighter.
"You are children, and lucky if we decide not to spank you. Now hold your peace until you are called on to speak."
Nynaeve flushed heavily, hoping they took it for embarrassment, and held her peace. Shiriam had never taken her eyes from Swan.
"Well, why have you never mentioned sending 3 children out to hunt lions?"
Swan drew a deep breath, but folded her hands and ducked her head penitently.
"There seemed no point, Aes Sedai, with so much else of importance. I have held nothing back when there was the faintest reason for telling. Every scrap I knew of the Black Adja I told. I've not known where these two were or what they were up to for some time. The important thing is that they are here now, and with those 3 Turangrial. You must realize what it means to have access to Elida's study, to her papers, if only in bits. You'd never have known that she knows where you are until it was too late, except for that."
"We realize that," Anaya said, eyeing Morvryn, who was still frowning at the ring.
"It is just that perhaps the means of it takes us a little by surprise."
"Tell Iron Riod," Mirel breathed. "Why, it has become no more than a matter for scholarly discussion in the tower, almost a legend. And Aiel dreamwalkers. Who would have imagined that Aiel wise ones could channel, much less this?"
Nynaeve wished they had been able to keep that secret, like Birgitta's true identity and a few other things they had managed to hold back. But it was difficult to keep things from slipping out when you were being questioned by women who could bore holes in stone with a look when they wanted. Well, she supposed she should be glad they had managed to hang on to what they had. Once Tel Iron Riod had been mentioned, and that they had entered it, a mouse would have treed cats before these women stopped asking questions.
Lyanna took a half-step forward, not looking at Swan.
"The important thing is that with these Tarangreal you can talk to Egwene, and through her to Moiraine. Between them you can not only keep an eye on Randall Thor, you should be able to influence him even in Cairhien."
"Where he went from the Aiel Waste," Swan said, "where I predicted he would be."
If her eyes and words were directed at the Aes Sedai, her astringent tone was plainly meant for Lyanna, who grunted.
Much good that did. Two Aes Sedai sent off to the waste chasing ducks.
Oh, yes. There was very definitely a chill there.
"Enough, children," Anaya said, very much as if they really were children, and she, a mother, used to their petty squabbles. She eyed the other Aes Sedai meaningfully.
"It will be a very good thing to be able to talk with Egwene."
"If these work as claimed," Morvryn said, bouncing the ring on one palm and fingering the other Tarangreal on her lap. The woman would not believe the sky was blue without proof. Shiryam nodded.
"Yes, that will be your first duty, Elaine, Nynaeve. You will have a chance to teach Aes Sedai, showing us how to use them."
Nynaeve curtsied, baring her teeth. They could take it for a smile if they chose.
"Teach them? Yes, and never get near the ring or the others again after."
Elaine's curtsy was even stiffer, her face a cool mask. Her eyes rolled toward that fool Idom almost longingly.
"The letters of rites will be useful," Carlinia said. With all that white Aja coolness and logic, testiness still showed in the way she clipped her words.
"Gareth Bryn always wants more gold than we have, but with those we may almost be able to satisfy him."
"Yes," Shiryam said. "And we must take most of the coin, too. There are more mouths to feed and more backs to clothe every day, here and elsewhere."
Elaine gave a gracious nod, just as if they would not take the money, whatever she said, but Nynaeve simply waited. Gold and letters of rites and even Tarangreal were only a part.
"For the rest," Shiryam went on, "we are agreed that you left the tower by command, however erroneous it was, and you cannot be held to account for it. Now that you are safely back with us, you will resume your studies."
Nynaeve only breathed out slowly. It was no more than she had expected since the questioning began. Not that she liked it, but for once no one was going to be able to accuse her of having a temper. Not when in all probability it would do no good. Elaine, though, burst out with a sharp, "But..." Just that before Shiryam cut in just as sharply. "You will resume your studies. You are both very strong, but you are not Aes Sedai yet." Those green eyes held them until she was sure they had taken it, and then she spoke again, her voice milder. Milder, but still firm. "You are returned to us, and if Salidar is not the White Tower, you may still consider it so. From what you have told us in the last hour, there is considerably more you have yet to tell." Nynaeve's breath caught, but Shiryam's eyes slid back to the Idom.
"A pity you did not bring the Shanshan woman with you. That you really should have done."
For some reason, Elaine blushed bright red and looked angry at the same time. For herself, Nynaeve was only relieved it was the Shanshan the woman meant.
"But accepted cannot be called to account for not thinking as Aes Sedai," Shiryam went on. "Swan and Lyanna will have many questions for you. You will cooperate with them and answer to the best of your abilities. I trust I do not have to remind you not to take advantage of their present condition. Some accepted and even some novices have thought to lay blame for events and even take punishments into their own hands." That mild tone became cold steel.
"Those young women are now extremely sorry for themselves. Need I say more?"
Nynaeve was no more hasty than Elaine to let her know she did not, which was to say they both almost stammered in their haste to get it out. Nynaeve had not thought of assigning blame. To her thinking, Aes Sedai were all to blame, but she did not want Shiryam angry with her. Realizing that fact drove the truth home bitterly. The days of freedom certainly were gone.
Good. Now you may take the jewels the Panarch gave you and the arrow. When there is time, you must tell me why she made you a gift like that, and go. One of the other accepted will find you places to sleep. Proper dresses may be harder to come by, but they will be found. I expect you to put your adventures behind you, and fit smoothly back into your proper place. Plain, although unspoken, was the promise that if they did not fit back in smoothly, they would be smoothed until they did. Shiriam gave a satisfied nod when she saw they understood. Beonin had not said a word since the shield of Sidar was lowered, but as Nynaeve and Elaine made their curtsies, the Grey Sister rose and strode to the table where their things were laid out. "And what of this?" she demanded in heavy Tarabonar accents, whipping aside the white cloth that covered the seal on the Dark One's prison. For a change, her large blue-grey eyes looked more angry than startled. "Are there to be no more questions about this? Do you all mean to ignore it?" The black-and-white disc lay there next to the wash-leather purse, in a dozen or more pieces, fitted back together as neatly as they could be. "It was whole when we put it in the purse." Nynaeve paused to work moisture back into her mouth. As much as her eyes had avoided the covering cloth before, they could not leave the seal now. Lyanna had smirked when she saw the red dress unwrapped from around its cargo, and said, "No, she would not run away from it, even in her head." "Why should we have thought to take special care? It's Quendiyar." "We didn't look at it," Elaine said breathlessly, "or touch it more than we had to. It felt filthy, evil." It no longer did. Carlinia had made them each hold a piece, demanding to know what evil feeling they were talking about. They had said the same things before more than once, and no one paid them any heed now. Shiriam rose and went to stand beside the honey-haired Grey. "We are ignoring nothing, Beonin. Asking these girls more questions will do no good. They have told us what they know." "More questions are always good," Morvryn said, but she had stopped fiddling with the Turangrial to stare at the broken seal as hard as anyone else. It might be Quendiyar. She and Beonin had each tested it and said it was, yet she had broken one fragment with her hands. "How many of the seven still hold?" Mirel asked softly, as if speaking to herself. "How long until the Dark One breaks free and the last battle comes?" Every Aes Sedai did some of almost everything according to her talents and inclinations, yet each Aja had its own reason for being. Greens, who called themselves the Battle Aja, held themselves ready to face new dreadlords in the last battle. There was almost a hint of eagerness in Mirel's voice. "Three," Anaya said unsteadily. "Three still hold. If we know everything, let us pray that we do. Let us pray three are enough. Let us pray those three are stronger than this one," Morvryn muttered. "Quendiyar cannot be broken so. Not and be Quendiyar. It cannot." "We will discuss this in due course," Shiriam said, "after more immediate matters that we can do something about." Taking the cloth from Beonin, she covered the broken seal once more. "Swan, Lyanna, we have reached a decision concerning..." She stopped short as she turned and saw Elaine and Nynaeve. "Were you not told to go?" For all her outward calm, the turmoil inside showed in her forgetting their presence. Nynaeve was more than ready to drop another curtsy, blurt a hurried, "By your leave, Aes Sedai," and scurry for the door. Without moving a muscle, the Aes Sedai and Swan and Lyanna watched her and Elaine go. Nynaeve felt their eyes like a shove. Elaine stepped not a whit more slowly, for all she cast another look at the Eidam. Once Nynaeve had the door closed and could lean back against its unpainted wood, clutching the gilded coffer to her breasts, she took her first comfortable breath, or so it seemed, since entering the old stone inn. She did not want to think about the broken seal. Another broken seal. She would not. Those women could shear sheep with their eyes.
She could almost look forward to watching their first meeting with the Wise Ones, if she was not likely to be squarely in the middle. It had been more than difficult when she first went to the tower, learning to do as she was told by others, to bend her neck. After long months when she gave the orders, well, once she had consulted Elaine, usually, she did not know how she was going to learn to pull wool and scratch gravel all over again. The common room, with its ill-patched plaster ceiling and cold stone fireplaces near collapsing, was the same beehive it had been when she first entered. No one gave her more than a glance now, and she gave them less. A small crowd awaited her and Elaine. Tom and Julin, on a rough bench against the flaking plaster wall, had their heads together with Uno, who was squatting in front of them, long sword hilt rising over his shoulder. Arena and Nicola, both staring amazed at everything and trying not to show it, occupied another bench with Marigan, who was watching Birgitta attempt to amuse Jarl and Sieve by awkwardly juggling three of Tom's colored wooden balls. Kneeling behind the boys, Min was tickling them, whispering in their ears, but they only clung to each other, silently staring with those two big eyes. Only two others in the entire room were not scurrying about. Two of Mirel's three warders happened to be leaning against the wall in conversation a few paces beyond the benches, just this side of the door back to the kitchen corridor. Croy Makin, a yellow-haired young splinter of stone from Andor with a fine profile, and Avar Hachami, hawk-nosed and square-chinned, and a thick, gray-streaked mustache like down-curved horns. No one would call Hachami handsome even before his dark-eyed stare made them swallow. They were not looking at Uno or Tom or anyone else, of course. It was only happenstance that they alone had nothing to do and had chosen just that spot to do it. Of course. Birgitta dropped one of the balls when she saw Nynaeve and Elaine. "What did you tell them?" she asked quietly, barely glancing at the silver arrow in Elaine's hand. The quiver hung at her belt, but her bow was propped against the wall. Moving closer, Nynaeve carefully did not look toward Makin and Hachami. Just as carefully she lowered her voice and was sparing with emphasis. "We told them everything they asked for." Elaine touched Birgitta's arm. "They know you are a good friend who has helped us. You are welcome to stay here, just the same as Arena and Nicola and Marigan." Only when some of Brigitte's tension melted did Nynaeve realize how much had been there. The blue-eyed woman scooped up the fallen yellow ball and smoothly tossed all three back to Tom, who snagged them with one hand and made them vanish in a single motion. She wore the faintest of relieved grins. "I can't tell you how glad I am to see the pair of you," Min said for at least the fourth or fifth time. Her hair was longer than it had been, though still a dark cap around her head, and she looked different in some other way that Nynaeve could not put a finger on. Surprisingly, freshly embroidered flowers climbed the lapels of her coat. She had always worn quite plain clothes before. "A friendly face is rare around here." Her eyes flickered just a fraction toward the two warders. "We have to settle down alone and have a long talk. I can't wait to hear what you've been up to since you left Tar Valon." Or to tell what she had been up to as well, else Nynaeve missed her guess. "I would like very much to talk to you, too," Elaine said, quite seriously. Min looked at her, then sighed and nodded, not as eager as a moment before. Tom and Julin and Uno came up behind Birgitta and Min, their faces set in that way men took on when they meant to say things they thought a woman might not like to hear. Before they could open their mouths, though, a curly-haired woman in an accepted's dress pushed between Julin and Uno, glowering at them, and planted herself in front of Nynaeve. Faelaine's dress, with its seven bands of color at the hem for the Ajahs, was not quite as white as it should have been, and her dark face wore a scowl. "I'm surprised to see you here, Wilder. I thought you'd gone running back to your village, and our fine daughter heir to her mother."
"Are you still souring milk for a hobby, Faelaine?" Elaine asked.
Nynaeve kept her face pleasant. "Just barely.
Twice in the tower, Faelaine had been set to teach her something. To put her in her place was her own opinion. Even when teacher and pupil were both accepted, the teacher had the status of Aes Sedai so long as the lesson lasted, and Faelaine took full advantage. The curly-haired woman had spent 8 years as a novice, and 5 more as accepted. She was not best pleased that Nynaeve had never had to be a novice at all, or that Elaine had worn pure white for less than a year. 2 lessons from Faelaine and 2 trips to Shiriam's study for Nynaeve, for stubbornness, temper, a list as long as her arm. She made her voice light.
"I heard Swan and Lyanna have been badly treated by someone. I think Shiriam means to make an example to end it once and for all."
She kept her eyes steady on the other woman's, and Faelaine's widened in alarm.
"I've done nothing since Shiriam..."
Faelaine's mouth snapped shut, and her face colored heavily. Min hid her mouth behind her hand, and Faelaine jerked her head around, studying the other women, from Birgitta to Marigan. She motioned brusquely to Nicola and Arena.
"You two will do, I suppose. Come with me. Now. No dawdling."
They rose slowly, Arena staring warily and Nicola with fingers fretting at the waist of her dress. Elaine stepped between them and Faelaine before Nynaeve could, chin high and eyes imperious blue ice.
"What do you want with them?"
"I am obeying Shiriam Sedai's orders," Faelaine replied. "I myself think they are too old for first testing, but I obey orders. A sister accompanies Lord Bryn's recruiting parties, testing women even as old as Nynaeve." Her sudden smile could have come from a viper.
"Shall I inform Shiriam Sedai that you disapprove, Elaine? Shall I tell her you won't let your retainers be tested?"
Elaine's chin came down somewhat during that, but of course she could not simply back down. She needed a diversion. Nynaeve touched Faelaine's shoulder.
"Have they found many?"
In spite of herself, the woman's head turned, and when she glanced back, Elaine was soothing Arena and Nicola, explaining that they would not be hurt or forced into anything. Nynaeve would not have gone so far. When Aes Sedai found someone with the spark born in her, like Elaine or Egwene, someone who would channel eventually whether she wanted to or not, they were quite open about bundling her into training, whatever her wishes. They seemed more lenient about those who could be trained, but would never touch Saidar without it, and about wilders, those who had survived the 1 in 4 chance of teaching themselves, usually without knowing what they had done, and often blocked in some way, as Nynaeve was. Supposedly they could choose to come or stay. Nynaeve had chosen to enter the tower, but she suspected that if she had not, she still would have gone, perhaps even tied hand and foot. Aes Sedai gave women who had the smallest chance of joining them as much choice as a lamb on a feast day.
3, Faelaine said after a moment. "All that effort, and they've found 3. One a wilder."
She truly did not like wilders.
"I do not know why they are so eager to find new novices. The novices we have can't be raised accepted until we regain the tower. It is all Swan Sanche's fault, her and Lyanna."
A muscle in her cheek twitched, as if she realized that remark might be thought to harass the former Amerlin and Keeper, and she seized Arena and Nicola each by an arm.
"Come along. I obey orders, and if you're to be tested, you'll be tested. Waste of time or no waste of time."
"A nasty woman," Min murmured, squinting after Faelaine as she hurried the others across the common room.
"You'd think, if there was any justice, she would have an unpleasant future ahead of her."
Nynaeve wanted to ask what Min had seen in her viewing of the curly-haired accepted. There were 100 questions she wanted to ask her. But Tom and the other 2 men planted themselves firmly in front of her and Elaine, Juelin and Uno to either side, so among the 3 they could see in every direction. Birgitta was leading Jarl and Sieve to their mother, keeping her out of it. Min knew what the men were up to, too, by the rueful look she gave them. She seemed about to say something, but in the end she only shrugged and joined Birgitta. By Tom's face he could have been about to comment on the weather, or ask what was for supper.
Nothing important.
This place is full of dangerous fools and dreamers. They think they can depose Elida. That's why Gareth Bryn is here, to raise an army for them.
Julin's grin almost split his dark face in two.
Not fools. Mad women and madmen. I don't care if Elida was there the day Loghain was born. They're mad to think they can pull down an Ammerlin sitting in the White Tower from here. We could reach Cairhien in a month, maybe. Rhaegan and a few of the others already have horses marked out for borrowing.
Uno was grinning, too. It looked incredibly incongruous with that glaring red eye on his patch.
The guards are set to watch for people coming in, not going out. We can lose them in the forest. It'll be dark soon. They'll never find us.
The women's donning their great serpent rings back by the river had had a remarkable effect on his language, though he did seem to make up for it when he thought they could not hear. Nynaeve looked at Elaine, who shook her head slightly. Elaine would put up with anything to be Aes Sedai. And herself? Small chance that they could influence these Aes Sedai to support Rand if they had decided to try controlling him instead. Make that no chance. She might as well be realistic. And yet there was healing. She would learn nothing of it in Cairhien. But here, not 10 paces from her, Thurva Maresis, a slender yellow with a long nose, was methodically ticking off points on a parchment with her pen. A bald-headed warder with a black beard stood conferring with Nisau Dachen near the door, head and shoulders above her despite being no taller than average, while Dagdara Finchi, as wide as any man in the